members and officials.
Morning,
honorable members, morning, officials.
Morning.
I think one has to log in 30 minutes before the meeting starts. This thing of network, sometimes it messes up. I've just connected with the phone, but I will try my level best to connect with the iPad rather, so as to be visible enough and also be able to connect correctly. Otherwise, I apologize for these minutes that have passed on, but let's try and make sure that we cover the time that we have lost. I really apologize. Honorable members, let's bow our heads where we are for a minute. Thank you very much, honorable members. Hello, honorable members. Thank you very much. Let's formally open the meeting and let me welcome everyone who's present in a meeting, which I suspect that also the minister has managed to join, even if she's not around the country. But they promise they will try their level best to join. I wish to welcome even the NGOs and the stakeholders that might have joined the meeting. I want to say we are taking an observation, or we are taking a notice of the Deaf Month. Might have forgotten to say to the deaf people, we wish their journey to be well. We understand that we still have some challenges in terms of the language, the sign language, that we are not really familiar with. We even said that we have to, as people of South Africa, to know this language and learn it and be assisted to be able to make sure that in departments and in governmental institutions, at least one person must be trained. But all of us must be capable and be able to get ready for the sign language so as to be able not to discriminate people that are unable to express themselves. I was reminded by watching at the TV, and they are having a seminar.
Recording in progress.
They are trying their level best to express themselves. It's worse with this GBV that is very prevailing in our areas and provinces. It's not easy for them to go to police station. It's not easy for them to go to courts and express themselves the way that they are supposed to express themselves. We also wish they a month, knowing that it's not going to be a month once off thing. It's going to be throughout the year. We took into consideration and take care of them. I thank you very much, honorable members. Let's not waste time, honorable members, knowing that we are having so many programs in front of us. Let's request Lindy to confirm the attendance. I can see that we are 34 that has joined. Can Lindy confirm the presence, the attendance?
Good morning, Chairperson. Minister, Deputy Minister, departmental officials and stakeholders in presence of this meeting of 21st of September 2022, I would like to confirm the following members of parliament. that are in attendance of this meeting. You, Chairperson, Member Mvana, I have Member Stock, I have Member Abrahams, I have Member Bilankulu, I have Member Van der Merwe, I have Member Aris, I have Member Opperman Chair, I have Member Marais. So those are the members that are in attendance so far. I wish to confirm that we are a quorum, Chair. We can take decisions in this meeting. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much, Lindy. I also wish to acknowledge the presence of the Deputy Minister, which is sometimes not being part of us because of other work commitments. We welcome you, Deputy Minister. It's nice that we are all present in this meeting. Let's go to the acting DG. I wonder, did he manage to join? Because he's out of the country. All right.
Yes, another one. Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and the Honorable Member. Mr. Nishpari is acting as the acting DG in the absence of the acting DG who is abroad. We appreciate and welcome us presenting your first quarter. Our principals are here. Can I then, maybe we should start with our minister and the minister just for to lead the department in this first quarter performance presentation. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Acting DG, I was saying confirm the attendance of the people you have told us that the deputy, the minister and the deputy are present. And I thought after that you will give over to me so as to chair the meeting and be able to give whoever that is supposed to get into the platform. Thank you very much for that. No, thank you very much for that. Acting is not an easy thing. You are not familiar with this. I understand you. Thank you very much, seemingly that we are able to, in fact, we are correcting and the officials are present, both the minister and the deputy. Let's then give over to the apologies first. Lindy, are there any apologies?
Yes, Chair. I have an apology from Member Masango, who is unable to attend today's meeting due to prior political party engagement. So she was with us, as well as Member Briet. She has a prior commitment for today. Thank you very much, Chair. Those are the two apologies. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Lindy. From the side of the department, acting. Apologies.
The whole expo of the department is with us, so we accept the activities abroad. Everybody is with us. The executive committee of the department is here. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I assume that the apologies have been accepted as they have presented. Thank you very much. Then can we proceed to the minister to give us the political overview for today? Over to you, Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I was talking to myself. A very good morning to you, Chairperson, all the honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, the department, of course, with the acting, representing the acting DG. I wish to thank you, Chairperson, for giving me this opportunity. I know that I am
oceans and oceans away, and it's only 3 a.m. here in the morning. So I wish to request that I switch off the video so that you are not bored with my sleepy face, but I'm wide awake. Can I please switch off the video? I just needed to make sure that you know it's me here. Thank you, Chairperson. To the Honorable Deputy Minister also, who is present in the meeting, the team from DSD, senior managers and officials of the Department of Social Development, and the rest of South Africans in this early morning hour. A very good morning, and I thank you for the opportunity to appear before this Honorable Committee to present the Department's financial and non-financial performance report for the quarter, as well as for the first quarter, as well as a report on the fourth National Plan of Action for Children for the period of 2019-2024. To start off with the commitments in the 2022-23 annual performance plan that I tabled in March and presented to this committee in April of this year, reflects the continuation and fulfillment of the strategic responsibilities of the sixth administration of our democracy. I take this opportunity to assure the committee that the social development portfolio, and I repeat, portfolio, continues to build from the lessons it learned in the previous reporting periods, because we believe there's got to be consistency in what we do. And to this end, the department is intentionally making efforts to improve the areas where its previous performance has been lagging. In this regard, Chairperson and Honorable Members, improvement in performance is evident in the achievement of over 80% of the department's targets, while the officials of the department are demonstrating heightened levels of willingness to improve how things should be done. This improvement can largely be attributed to the inputs that the department continuously receives from the Honorable Members, as I always say, of this committee. And of course, I am always indicating, Chairperson, that the oversight that is done by the Portfolio Committee and the members, and the continuous querying and questioning of issues helps us improve our systems of governance. These inputs are complemented by officials giving more time to planning and factoring a realistic approach into their work. And of course, more must be done in the reporting quarter as years to come. Likewise, the expenditure report that you will be receiving today gives an account of how the department utilized the allocated funds towards the implementation of our program and services. And during the first quarter of the current financial year, covering the period from April to June, not only did the department and its entities respond to the felt needs of the communities that were affected by episodes of inclement weather in parts of KwaZulu-Natal, Northwest and the Eastern Cape provinces, they also implemented their annual performance and operational plans regardless of the national state of disaster under which they responded to these unfavorable eventualities. Acting within the provisions of the national state of disaster, the psychosocial programs and of the department responded to the trauma that followed the loss of 435 loved ones during this period, in as much as the department navigated its much needed interventions into physically inaccessible areas owing to the destruction of infrastructure to flood-affected communities. Throughout this period, Chairperson and Honorable Members, the social development portfolio acted with agility and established innovative partnerships that enhanced its responsiveness and visibility. And Chairperson, here, I do want to indicate that the lessons that we're learning throughout, we're looking at how we can improve our system so that when there are disasters, we don't scramble around, but we have systems in place and we are preparing ourselves long before, because some of the disasters we are already knowing that they happen, particularly during the rainy season and particularly sometimes in dry weather where there are fires in some parts of South Africa. The impact of our intervention in these communities dovetails our earlier interventions in communities whose lives and livelihoods were adversely impacted by the July 2021 unrest and never-ending shock of COVID-19. And Honorable Chairperson, now switching to the second presentation that you'll be receiving as a recent study that was conducted by the Department on Impact of COVID-19 on children demonstrated that children, in brackets, especially children who live in formal settlements, continue to experience one form of vulnerability or another. In the same vein, I note that climate change is having adverse effects on children's health and lives. The recent floods are a case in point. Regrettably, more than 60% of South Africa's children live in poverty. Child poverty in our society demands a whole of government collaboration and multi-sectoral partnerships that are designed to undo the multiple deprivation that most children are suffering. The latest reports by Stats SA tells us that more than twice as many children who live in rural areas, which is 84.4%, face multidimensional poverty compared to children in urban areas, 41.3%. The highest multidimensional poverty rates are found among children in Limpopo, 82.8%, and the Eastern Cape, 78.7%. On the other hand, children in the Gauteng and Western Cape provinces are better off with 33.6% and 37.1% of children respectively considered to be multidimensionally poor. Of course, this should not be understood to mean that the lives of children reported in the latter provinces are better off. Certainly not. Likewise, children have been equally content with violence, the burden of diseases, as well as multiple forms of exclusion. South Africa has a progressive human rights framework within which children's rights are specified, and this is Section 28 of the Constitution. The sixth administration of our democratic government remain committed towards the realization, promotion, and protection of children's rights as outlined in our Constitution. Moreover, we have ratified international instruments such as the Convention on the Rights of the Child and the African Union's Charter on the Rights and Welfare of Children. The National Plan of Action for Children, whose report you are receiving this morning, was approved by Cabinet in October 2020 at the height of COVID-19 lockdown for implementation between 2019 and 2024. This is government's overarching plan to address the challenges that our country's children have to experience on a daily basis. Informed by the plan of our National Development Plan, the Sustainable Development Goals, the UN Committee on the Rights of the Child recommendation, this national plan was developed by the National Steering Committee on the Rights of the Child that consists of several departments, inputs from provincial and local spheres of government, as well as consultations with civil society, academia, and children themselves. And we emphasize the children themselves because their voices must be heard. This work was competently coordinated by the Department of Social Development, having implementation requirements across the three spheres of government. The National Plan of Action insists on accountability where interests of children are of concern. As I conclude, please allow me to announce that during 2021 and 2022 financial year respectively, I presented progress reports on the National Plan of Action for Children to Cabinet for adoption. And Chairperson, I wish to thank you for this opportunity, but of course the department is here to present, and I'm requesting that members receive the department's presentation on quarter one performance report of 2022-2023 financial year, as well as the fourth national plan of action for the children for the period 2019-2024. And with those words, Chairperson, I wish to thank you. I will stay in the meeting as much as I possibly can. As I said, I'm 6 hours behind, and it's early morning here in New York at the United Nations. This is where we are, representing South Africa as usual and representing South Africa with pride. Chairperson, over to you.
Thank you very much, Minister Anders. you are far away from us, but what needs to happen is that, because I think I was sort of thinking about you whilst you are away, I only gave you an opportunity to do the political overview rather than to start with the adoption of the agenda. I think those are the mistakes that have been done. Maybe I'm also acting as the acting is also having some hiccups and handicaps. I am thanking you, Minister. You have given us an idea what is it that you are going to get from the department. Thank you very much for that. Let's allow you to excuse yourself wherever you think you feel you have to excuse yourself. We will be with the deputy minister with us. Thank you very much. And then let's go back to the adoption of the agenda. Even if the minister was going to give the political overview anyway, even if we haven't adopted the agenda, but I apologize for that little mistake and oversight of this issue. Can I get the agenda, Lindy? I'm still struggling to connect with my iPad. I don't know what has happened. I'm thinking that maybe it's the data, I don't know.
I've lighted the agenda already.
Yes, I see it.
Okay.
And the minister has given us the political overview. She told us what is it that we're going to get. The first item, Lindy, is presented by the department for in the national plan of action of 2019-2024. And then the second item, Lindy, briefing by the department on the first quarter report and financial report for 2022 and 2023. And the financial year that will end April, June, 2022. And then there is committee deliberation and closing. Can I get someone who will adopt the agenda? Honorable Stock.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. A very good morning,
morning.
To all honorable members, Minister, Deputy Minister, and senior officials who are on the platform. Chairperson, I would like to move for the adoption of the agenda. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Stock. You were prompt. Can I get to the seconder?
Chair.
Lisa.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, and greetings to our minister in New York and also to our deputy minister, our colleagues. I will second the adoption of the agenda.
Lizelle, Honorable Lizelle has seconded the adoption of the agenda. Thank you very much, Honorable Members. Then let's go straight to the department and give us the first item. Over to you, Acting Minister.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Minister, Deputy Minister, and Honorable Members, I will ask the Mr. Ketali Kongwa, Acting Chief Director responsible for this work, to do the presentation on the first item that has been requested. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Over to you.
Thank you, Acting DG. Good morning, Chairperson, Members. Minister, Deputy Minister, and official. This presentation is on the National Plan of Action for Children. This is the plan that was approved by Cabinet for 2019 until 2024.
Thank you.
The presentation is as follows. We'll take the portfolio committee through the papers. We'll do a contextual overview. We'll summarize the intent. We'll highlight who are the target stakeholders for this plan. We'll give some of the strategic directions, the assumptions, and then as we move on, I'll be updating the committee on which part we are covering. In this next slide, the purpose of this presentation is to highlight the plan itself to the portfolio committee for noting. With regards to the context and the overview of the plan, as Minister correctly showed, South Africa is a very progressive constitution, which especially in Section 28 highlights the key areas of rights that speak to children. It's based on our own constitution. We have ratified, therefore, the Convention on the Rights of the Child, the CRC. This was done in 1995. This was then the first ever instrument for us as a country after the democratic dispensation. With this, the then former president, Mr. Nelson Mandela, ensured that there is an establishment of an inter-ministerial cabinet committee on the rights of the child. This also had been formed a steering committee that included the newly formed Human Rights Commission, as well as from the UN, UNICEF, assisted us to develop the very first plan of action for children. After that, the framework was developed. The first national program of action for children was approved by cabinet in 1996. Then the ratification trade obligated the country to submit periodic reports to the UN. And one of them, the outcomes of that report was a recommendation based on Article 44 of the Convention that the country needs to develop its own plan of action for children. So then this report also outlines measures that must be put in place to promote and protect the rights of children, including the drafting and approval of the country's first national plan of action for children, which was then established with the assistance of the Human Rights Commission, amongst others, of course, to protect, promote, and monitor children's rights in the country. So these measures were welcomed by the committee, so much so that in 1998, President then established the Office of the Rights of the Child to coordinate child rights within the country. And this was a move from the office that was located within the Department of Health, which was previously designated by cabinet to run with the implementation of the National Plan of Action for Children. So in this, so to date, the country Chairperson has developed four national plans of action for children, with the first one, which was in 1996, and the last one was approved in 2020. That's from 2019 right up until 2024. This plan is aligned to the NDP. It is especially focusing on Chapter 11, which is the chapter that deals with services and aspirations that the country has for children. It cuts across issues around nutrition, healthcare, education, social care, safety, the elimination of programs such as hunger, nutrition, some of the macronutrient deficiencies that affect the growth of children, including their cognitive development, especially as children. So this MPAC is implemented by government departments as their I implemented these in collaboration with in this next slide. In this next slide, we are summarizing the intent for the MPEC. As Minister in her review mentioned, the MPEC strengthens the children's rights implementation through following an alignment to strategic areas and commitments that we have as a country. Key to this is, of course, the coordination and the dissemination of information on the context of the national agenda on children's rights. So this touches on how we facilitate the process to develop capacity of the national children's rights system across the three spheres, how we are actually also going to mainstream the framework into the country's national development plan, how we reflect on child's rights as we have been since 1996, how we monitor the implementation of the plan, especially looking at the commitments that we have agreed to in terms of the AU's African Charter on the Rights and Welfare of the Child, as well as internationally on the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. So these treaty obligations are there to ensure that both government and civil society honor their own obligations. Also, the MPEC is aligned to the SDGs as well as the Africa We Want, the AU Agenda 63. So the targeted stakeholders in the National Plan of Action for Children are as follows. The cabinet, they have the mandate to approve and endorse the implementation, but they also have to monitor the mainstreaming of these rights of children. And it is now coordinated along the MTSF period, which therefore strengthens the integration of children's rights. Secondly, this particular committee, as representing Parliament, they have the informed oversight of children's rights, especially the implementation across all committees, as well as keeping the executive to account on the commitments that they have given for children. Officials in government, especially the directors general, as well as the foster clusters of directors general, they have the obligation to ensure that all the commitments as they are outlined in the plan are followed up insofar as their administrative powers allow them. We also have specific guidelines within the plan for child rights practitioners to ensure that they are familiar, of course, with the plan itself, with the goals, and they proactively move towards the achievement of these commitments. All formations of civil society, they have a role to play. We have outlined, for example, what business is expected to do, what other public and private partnerships need to be engaged in order to further the implementation of the plan. Children themselves as active citizens and agents of change, insofar as the African Charter on Human and People's Rights establishes that considering that enjoyment of rights and freedom also implies performance of duties on the part of everyone. So they are, of course, that the rights and the responsibilities that children have in this plan. The line departments also have a role as service delivery departments to incorporate performance targets of the plan within their own strategic plans. The Chapter 9 institutions, as they look at issues of human rights and other independent bodies, of course, they need to advocate and have oversight and monitor and report also on what they observe in the implementation of the we also submit our progress both to the AU and the UN for support towards the advancement of these rights. For us, this plan has a very valid strategic direction. First and foremost, it is based on the provisions within the Constitution, but also both the regional and international commitments that we have. Also, this plan transforms these commitments into developmental programs that are offered by both government and non-governmental stakeholders, and these they draw into the high-level strategic plans that can be owned and monitored by all sectors that are involved. The assumptions that we have made when developing this plan over the next 5 years is that, one, it will be directed towards the plight of children, and it will compel all relevant organs of society to intensify, therefore, their commitments and invest and collaborate and work together to ensure that every child has equal opportunities to reach his or her full potential. Number two, government remains committed to advance the constitutional mandate of children's rights, especially through the implementation of the two instruments that we have referred to, the UN and the AU tools. Number three, children's rights implementation is vital component of the national development agenda, as well as the broader NDP 2020. We are therefore going to be monitoring the investments that we as a country are making on children, as well as development of imperatives, which then would be likely to foster the sustainable as well as economic stability and national security. So the purpose of this document, again, as Minister mentioned, to provide an overarching mechanism through which government facilitates and transforms international, regional, and international commitments and the strategic targets in a very coherent national organization to advance the rights of children. Our vision here is that we'll be able to attain South Africa's goals as they are outlined in the NDP, but also we have envisaged South Africa where everyone feels free yet connected to others, where everyone embraces their full potential, a country where opportunity is determined not just by birth, but by ability, education, and hard work. And the mission, therefore, of this plan is to advance the full realization of children's rights through the promotion, implementation, and monitoring of the national organization. The goal, therefore, is to provide a clear set of strategic priorities that are directly aligned to government's development plan and its regulatory implementation and monitoring mechanisms. We have several objectives aligned to this goal. Some of these are at the policy level, wherein we will be strengthening the capacity of children's rights, child welfare sector at all levels, as well as promoting those policies and the legislation that advances the realization of all rights of children. The other objective on the next slide is at a mainstream level, wherein we're making sure that all services for children are mainstream within the work that we perform in all sectors and in all spheres of government. At an advocacy level, the objective is to strengthen and heighten awareness within government departments and in the general public of the principles of children's rights implementation, but also want to support and embrace participation and contribution by children themselves. And by doing so, they would have a voice within what interventions happen within their own space. The objective at an institutional level, we hope that this plan achieves the strengthening of leadership, and it also will consolidate the institutional arrangements and measures of Chartered coordination and implementation. We're also going to create an enabling environment for this plan's implementation and enhance the influence and authority of the APEC structures, such as the one we are presenting to today, as well as ensuring that there are adequate resource allocation to see through the implementation of this plan. The last objective is at a monitoring and evaluation level, where we are going to monitor what we have structured as micro goals and indicators to enable both departments and provinces, but as well as municipalities and other organs of civil society to create those micro goals and indicators that are in line with the plan itself. This plan is also aligned to the MTSF and the MTEF period. We are also coordinating and facilitating the compliance within the treaty obligations that we have to the UN and the AU respectively. And we therefore are going to be submitting a matrix of reports every year to oversee how this has been implemented. In the next slide, the institutional mechanisms that are in place, first and foremost, we are trying to make sure that all government departments at the national level, but also at provincial level, as well as in local levels, we speak with the same level of alertness. There's standardized implementation of resources in terms of budget allocation and funding. We are also able to meet on a regular basis to monitor how we are implementing, but also how we are able to share the implementation and some of the learnings that we have as we meet. In the next slide, there is also a participatory element that is linked with this plan. Henceforth, the ORCs will be facilitating partnerships with the arts and culture to make sure that we are able to observe the national days that deal with children, but also those national days that are not necessarily targeting children, but children may be affected. We are therefore going to heighten the participation of children in that regard. So it is through focused child participation facilitated by relevant technocrats that children as future adults are enabled to responsibly embrace and internalize much of the principles of their own rights and their related obligation. In the next slide, the implementation plan is offered in four pillars. The first pillar, we are looking at strengthening the institutional support, and we develop capacity of all duty bearers. In the next pillar, we do the advocacy and social mobilization. In the other pillar, it's where we develop annual reports and report also to the treaty obligations, and we coordinate the key child rights priority programs. So when we monitor the realization of these rights, one of the key things is that we have a single document wherein we have drawn our progress so far as the SDGs and other priorities and outcomes of the NDP, especially those that relate to the African Charter on the Rights and Welfare of the Child, as well as the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. The values and the principles of these conventions are domesticated, of course, through our own legislation and policies, and therefore the MNE deals with the implementation of these policies and the legislation that is imperative we therefore have coincided the development of the plan to coincide with the with each of the administrations. So this fourth plan coincides, of course, with the targets that the sixth administration has put for itself. We have therefore accordingly aligned the implementation of this plan with the FTSF policy framework, which monitors the broad implementation of the government program. In this next slide, we highlight therefore that we are working together with all the other key departments. We are heightening the way in which we disaggregate data across a number of creepy lines. For example, we are keen when we report to show the difference between the experiences of a boy and a girl child. We are keen also to show wherein we are able to apply the age, the population groups, the residential location, as well as the disability and the education of children as we move along. In the next slide, we therefore, in these two slides, will be just showing again at a high level progress that we have made since the implementation of the fourth national plan of action for children. In the first pillar that deals with the institutional support and capacity building, we have therefore joined forces to develop a new program which will capacitate GT bearers. We have received funding from the UNICEF and we have finalized a manual wherein all GT bearers that work with children would get technical capacity and support necessary for them to engage in child-centered learning across government value chain, but also to build a statewide child-centered, rights-based transformational agenda that focuses on children. In the second pillar, what we have been able to achieve is the continued advocacy and social mobilization on key issues that affect children. So we, across government, of course, this meant not just the Department of Social Development, majority of government departments have specific programs where they partner with their key stakeholders to implement their own advocacy programs. We have already addressed advocacy strategy as a country, and in this advocacy strategy, it deals with majority of the social ills, and we highlight how, therefore, we can mobilize to improve children's experience with this result. In the next slide, we have been able to submit to Cabinet the two reports on the implementation of the National Plan of Action for Children. We have also been able to submit to the AU, this we did in April this year. We submitted to the AU the country's third periodic report that deals with the rights and welfare of the child. As members are aware, they dealt also with the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child in the last week. This will be then a report as we seek your concurrence with the cabinet decision to adopt that report before we lodge it to the office in Geneva. In the next slide, the department is also working with the National Steering Committee on the Rights, and it comprises of all government departments, wherein on quarterly basis, departments report progress that they are making with regards to the implementation of the plan. We also have established provincial steering committees, which also meet on regular basis. If committee members read the 2021 report, they will see that most provinces have implemented the provincial steering committees, but not all provinces have been meeting on a quarterly basis. deal is that in the next year we would have institutional mechanisms that would allow at a district level to facilitate the mainstreaming and coordination of the same that we observe at both national and provincial departments. So in the next slide, we have had challenges, Chairperson, in the implementation of National Plan of Action for Children. Challenges, they relate to the inadequate participation by some of government departments whom they have not bought into the idea that everyone must have a role to play in the development of children. In the report, we are allowing the departments the first 2 years to get their house in order, and cabinet have given us the go ahead that with the next report we should move on to name those government departments that are not implementing at the same pace the obligations that we have placed as a country and commitments on children. We are still working on making sure that we have standardized human resources as part of our institutional arrangements. Of course, not all provinces and also not all local governments have enough resources, human resources, to cater for the implementation of child rights. So we are working on standardized these. And lastly, the limited capacity, of course, this cascades to the provincial, district, and local levels. So in this next slide, as we conclude, the ORC remains responsible for coordinating, developing, mainstreaming capacity, ensuring advocacy, monitoring and evaluating the implementation of the Plan of Action for Children. The implementation, of course, is the responsibility of all government departments in partnership with a range of their own stakeholders, as well as all spheres of government. We recognize that government cannot alone deliver on this, and we have to partner with appropriate partners. Also, we would like to emphasize that we have a dedicated child rights system that must be mainstreamed across all spheres of government. Key relevant stakeholders must be participating, and there is a role for us wherein we meet on a regular basis with civil society also to receive their observations on how we are doing as government in the implementation of these indicators. Also, the National Plan of Action is on children, is also on child rights, and this plan also calls for all of us to instill in our own children the strong conviction that the rights of a child are intrinsically linked to the corresponding responsibilities, so that they grow understanding that they will be responsible adults. So the NPAC aims to ensure that parliament, families and households, communities, faith-based, community-based organizations are able to continue with the implementation and respective mandate to support the effective implementation of the plan. Our recommendation in this slide is that the National Plan of Children consider as well as note the progress that has been made in the National Plan of Action for Children. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ketani. Honorable members, Chairperson, there we are.
Okay, thank you very much. I don't even remember who was presenting. Thank you very much for the presentation. Though there was an echo behind him, I wasn't sure whether to say he must come closer to the mic or what, but what is best is that there was there were slides, and also they were slighted, so it assisted us. Honorable members, that's the presentation. I'm not sure whether let's present both of these, but they are different. Can we get an indication on how to follow this, or rather get into this one and then follow with the other one, because it's different things. Honorable Lisa.
Sorry, Chairperson, my hand was actually up to engage on this presentation, yeah.
Okay. Alex, you also want to engage on the presentation?
Yes, Chairperson, and then let's move over to the next item.
Let's continue interacting with it. Lizelle?
Thank you very much.
Followed by Alex and Polnit for now. Thank you
very much, Chairperson, and good morning again to all of our colleagues. Thank you very much for the presentation. I think mine will just be comments and a few questions of clarity. I think it's very important that we, of course, do have this plan of action. However, we are very good at crafting plans. However, when I'm listening at this plan, I don't really, also the plan is already 2 years in the making or 3 years in the making. We are 2 years away from 2024. And I don't get a sense, I'm always very concerned if we are producing plans to meet country obligations. But for me, this plan doesn't speak to the realities that the minister outlines when she made her introductory remarks, and she spoke very clearly about the crisis that children in South Africa faces. And so my real question is, when listening to this plan, I don't get a sense of how this plan, which is already 3 years old, is having any impact or will have any impact on the real challenges that children in our country faces. For example, the minister made an introductory remark about the crisis of malnutrition, stunting in children. For example, I think there's a real crisis in us not being able to monitor the use of the child support grant. We've seen, for example, a reduction or a regression in the relationship between the state and NGOs that work in the space of protecting children's rights. We don't have enough social workers. There's bureaucratic delays, for example, in processing adoption. And then, for example, I think children with disabilities, for example, are very much left out of the picture when they have to access services or access schooling. So the presentation on paper leaves me a bit confused, if I can put it like that, in terms of how does it really speak to the challenges of our children, the real challenges that children are facing, whether it's hunger, whether it's poverty, whether it's abuse. We heard during the public hearings across the country that we don't have enough social workers to monitor the abuse of children. So I really, it leaves me a bit concerned that we come to committee and we table reports. And yes, on paper, these reports are very good. But how does it really translate into progress, support, and protection for our children on the ground? And I wanted to say, I heard that at the last slide, we talk about that there's not enough support from the various government departments, limited capacity to implement it at the various levels. And then I heard a comment that said we gave government departments 2 years to get their houses in order. And then after that, they will be named and shamed. But my question again is that enough to name and shame government departments that are not coming to the table? Because surely for me, in my mind, if you're putting a plan together and people are not implementing it and then we're simply naming and shaming, it doesn't really speak to me to a solution. And then finally, there was a slide that said that the department presented annual reports to cabinet in 2020 and 2021 on the monitoring of this plan of implementation, and I wanted to know whether we could also get copies of those annual reports that were submitted to Cabinet. Thank you very much, Chair.
Hello. Thank you very much, Susan.
Good morning again to you, Chairperson, and good morning to all the colleagues on the platform. So, Chairperson, I've also just, you know, made a note similar to what the Honourable Van der Merwe indicated, that our committee has always asked for impact slides and outcome indicators. And we always get these presentations that don't tell us what the real impact is of the plans and what the real outcomes are. And we're putting it out there again that when the department, you know, brings us presentations, that these two components please be included in the presentation. And Chairperson, you know, when we are busy with items like this that the committee doesn't regularly engage with, it is always beneficial that the committee then receives the full impact document and receives the annual reports. And, you know, I did ask the committee secretary, and thank you to the committee secretary for getting those annual reports to me. I got it just before the meeting, so I'm still busy working through it. Because what we see in those annual reports is more of the how the department's planning to do it, as opposed to these presentations and plans that just speak to monitor, coordinate, you know, draft and develop. The department's always so silent on the how they plan to do it. And I would like to see more of that when they do come and leave the committee chairperson. And another thing, when going through, you know, the full impact document, the Annexure H, which speaks to, you know, the implementation of the plan, I've just found it really wanting, Chairperson, because there's no actual clear indicators and targets when it comes to numbers that the department, you know, aims to reach with this plan. And, you know, one of the questions I have to the department, you know, is where are does the impact plan fit into the APP? Will they be able to give us some of those targets and how they've incorporated the impact in their APP, but not just social development, Chairperson, the other departments as well, you know, home affairs and education. Can the department confirm to us that all the departments who play a role in children, if the impact and the plan has been put into the APP and have targets been set? Then, Chairperson, you know, another slide that was lacking for me is what about budget allocations and funding? Because, you know, when government commits budgets, you know, that tells us government is serious about the plight of children, especially when you look at how much budget has been committed. So in terms of this plan, I would like to know, you know, what are the budget allocations? And then also, Chairperson, in both the document and the report, the department speaks about two possible scenarios, you know, whether the Office of the Rights of Children be located in Premier's offices, or do they continue in social development under the branch welfare services directed? And in my reading, I see that some provinces have it in the Premier's office, while some provinces do not. And I just would like to find out, you know, from the department, when are we settling on one or the other of these scenarios? Because I do understand that the lack of uniformity and the lack of assigned functions, whether it's in the Premier's office who has, you know, more accountability and authority, you know, versus the provincial DSD offices in order to bring this plan into effect. So if they can just provide clarity on when are we deciding on the scenarios. And then of course in writing, if they can, you know, please give us a list of which provinces have it in the Premier's offices and which provinces have it in DSD. Then, Chairperson, I've spoken about, you know, the how and how that's lacking, but I would also like to find out, where are my notes here? Also, you know, Chairperson, when you hear that some provinces haven't bought into the idea, again, I think as the committee, we need to know who these provinces are who haven't bought into the idea of children. I think that's very important. And then, Chairperson, you know, when the plan speaks about child participation, you know, again, we'd like, well, I for one would like to see, you know, yes, we're going out to schools, how many schools we plan to reach for the quarter or the term, you know, how many engagements and the number of children we're trying to reach. Because to me, that speaks of targets that can be measured when implementing this plan. And, you know, with the fire of Parliament, you know, something as simple as, you know, Children's Parliament, you know, that won't be taking place anytime soon. So, you know, what does the department have in place in the absence of now Children's Parliament, because there is no parliament, you know, to house these children. So, Chairperson, that's just some of my concerns, that, you know, that we have reports that are more impact-driven and output-driven and not just telling us about that they intend to monitor and intend to coordinate and intend to develop, that we actually see how it's put in action. So thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Paulette.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, my problem that I'm having, thank you very much. Good morning, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. My colleague said somehow covered me, especially when you talk about children's rights, you need to have the other departments as well, like education, like the previous speaker was saying. But there's one thing that is lacking about this thing, which is the discipline, you know. If you look at schools, you know, the discipline problem is very huge. Teachers are being killed within school and outside school premises. You speak about arts and culture in one of the slides. It's going to happen in school, it's going to happen in private. There's nothing said about sports. And then, Chairperson, we're having a crisis in primary schools where children are abusing drugs, where there are children that are smoking dacha in the morning before they go to school. We're having a problem with alcohol abuse. We're having primary school children that is getting pregnant, you know. What are the departments saying about that? You know, the whole plan looks very good on paper, but in practice it is something else, you know. How are you going to get all the stakeholders together and you don't have the Department of Education there? It doesn't make sense, Chairperson. So my problem is just that children are having rights. The child can even tell you in your house, if you're going to give me a hiding, I'm going to go to the police station. How far are we going with these children's rights, you know? And at the moment, we're having a big, big problem with people. The children don't even respect grown people anymore. When you go to the shop, you will see they're standing, smoking, there's, it is just chaos. There's nothing, like when we grew up, if we saw a grown person, you will hide your cigarette away or you will carry the bag. But when you talk about children's rights, what are we saying exactly to these children? Are the children interpreting these things correctly? Because I have a huge problem with this thing, because on the one hand, the child is having all the rights, on the other hand, what is the parents and the teachers are doing about all these rights? So this thing on paper, it looks always very good, the presentations are very good, but the implementation of these things, are you getting all the stakeholders together, like Department of Education, Department of Home Affairs, all the things where children's rights are being implemented? We need to discuss this thing broadly. This thing is a very huge thing. Chairperson, we talk about HIV/AIDS children where parents have passed away, those children are by themselves, house-headed children, households. What is happening to those children, you know? Are they just being left there? We talk about the disabled children. No one is mentioning them as well, like the previous speaker was saying. I don't want to repeat what they were saying. But this thing is so broad, and it's like they are just touching, it's like a drop in the ocean, and we can have a discussion the whole day on this thing, Chairperson. This is just my input. It is just something that is coming to me, and I just feel that this drug abuse in primary schools is a massive problem. Teenage girls are primary schools getting pregnant. We are giving these children all these rights, but what is happening to all these rights? Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson,
Good morning, Chair. Morning, Chair.
Morning, Honorable Kami.
Did you know my
turn? And then followed by Honorable Dikhala.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. And thank you for the presenter for this presentation. Chairperson, there's a big concern in the country in terms of children living with autism. Right now, the school system, there's no school system that accommodates these children because these children are not children that have children living with disabilities, nor are they fitting into the normal, you know, school system. So there's a lack of a system to accommodate these children that are living with autism. The other thing is that the Department of Education wanted to be compulsory for children to attend an ECD in order for them to go to grade one. However, and the previous speakers have touched on that, is that we have a shortage of facilities for children living with disabilities in terms of ECDs, because there's not enough ECD practitioners, there's not enough ECD facilities to accommodate these children. The other thing that I would like to touch on, we have recently worked with the Children's Amendment Bill, and it was passed by Parliament, the rights of children. But the biggest concern is that even though we see children at the age of 18 as minors, there's a right of consent which is at the age of 16. And then you ask yourself, do we still have, you know, how will this children's right be covered by this amendment bills and things like that? I think most important is that to protect the rights of children, we need to bring synergy into the respective legislation that got to do with children's rights. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Arus, Honorable Stoke.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Let me also join my colleagues who spoke before me to appreciate the presentation that was presented now by the department in terms of the NPAC. It's quite appreciated. I had two questions which I wanted to canvass, but they've already been canvassed by my colleagues, so I will not be repeating them. I just want to take and utilize an opportunity to appreciate the level of commitment from the side of our minister, Melindiwe Zulu, for her commitment, even if when she's out of the country, irrespective of whether there's a huge time difference between us and the country that she's visiting, she's always available to come and join the portfolio committee. And it also happens when she's in South Africa, where she moves out of the cabinet, submits an apology, joins the portfolio committee. So I think that's a very important positive attribute from a side of leadership and commitment, which we need to appreciate. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Dikhang. Yes, you are right. That is a show of a dedication and commitment and respect to us. A person who is out of the country, busy with other work, having different times, but will always make it a point, even if she has to attend the cabinet. She will make a plan to divide herself amongst the two meetings. Thank you very much. We really appreciate that. Thank you. I'm not even going to ask questions myself because really most of the questions have been asked. I was also concerned about exactly which provinces don't agree with this. And let me give over to the department to assist with answers.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and honorable members for the comments and questions that have been raised. We will go through the questions and then we will answer. Those that we were not able to answer, we will provide. And I think one of the things that I'm thinking we need to do is to present the progress report that we will request that we come back with the report on this, just brief the control committee on how far we've gone into the plan, as we are in the middle of the halfway through the time for the plan. I will now ask FTDDG Isabella Sikawana, and will be assisted by a Clean Chief Director, Ketani Klongwa, to answer the questions. Over to you, colleagues.
Thank you very much, FTDDG. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, members of the Portfolio Committee, Honourable Minister and Honourable Deputy Minister, and colleagues. Let me also echo the same sentiment of appreciating the comments and questions that have been raised by members. And then I will start touching on some few things, and the Ketani will also follow in terms of the other areas. First and foremost, Chairperson, let me assure the committee that we will be able to distribute the plan and the two reports that we have presented to Cabinet. But also, we will also distribute the state report. You know, that was deposited in the previous years, but also the one that we will be depositing, we are planning to deposit for this financial year. I want to start by the role of the department. While we dwell much on the issue of coordination, our role currently is to coordinate and monitor, but we still have a role as a department to also implement. And maybe that's why our presentation was centered more on you know, the role that the department has to play to ensure that this plan is being developed, helps to realize that the Qatar reflected on the process that we have undertaken to ensure that we put the plan in place, utilizing all the structure that has been established, the National Committee, the Sierra National Steering Committee that is in place, but also ensuring that, you know, all the stakeholders, you know, participate in terms of the development of a plan. And we highlighted, you know, the key areas, you know, that basically relate to the issue of coordination. Now, having said that, the implementation plan is meant to look at the real issues that are affecting children in the country, because this is a cross-cutting plan, you know, that is being implemented by everybody. And maybe I will also touch on the fact that, you know, in terms of nurturing children or raising children, it's everybody's business, and it starts within a family, where the family has got a role in terms of ensuring that the children are socialized with norms, the norms and values. They are starting with the norms and values of the family, which, you know, go to the community and society at large. So it is the responsibility of everybody. And if one partner does not play the role that is supposed to be played, this child will end up, you know, engaging in those activities that are not going to benefit the child or are going to go against the norms of the society. Like, for example, when children go to school, they engage in those. So these activities is that has someone. So all of us have got a responsibility to ensure that we do that. And the plan, I think it encompasses all those things. So as a department, we are coordinating and ensuring that all the departments, you know, are really participating. And when you look at our report, you'll realize that all the government departments have been able to account in terms of the issues that affect them. You know, we still getting there, but I think we have started somewhere to ensure that we address the issues that affect children, but we still have to do more to ensure that we improve, you know, the lives of the children. Now, as we are going to present the report, we'll look into the both indicators and the impact, you know, that we have made in the lives of the children, because the report also touches, we have found that even our legislation and different government departments are not aligned. And the report touches on policy reforms, on progress, and on how do you promote, you know, the rights of the children, and also, most importantly, the issue of child participation, which is at the center of everything. Now, coming to, we know that at national level, we develop policies, we monitor, but however, having said that, it is very much important that we see as whether our policies are translated into making an impact in the lives of the children. And, you know, as we mentioned earlier, as Ketani has mentioned earlier, it is important that we establish those institutional mechanisms at different levels to ensure that local coordination does not only happen at national, but it happens also at provincial level, it happens also at local level. And we are in the process of ensuring that those structures are put in place to ensure that, you know, as we said, even at the local government and everybody that is involved, you know, at that level, you know, ensure that that coordination happens and services for children improved. In terms of the budget, we commit that we will send the budget to the committee later. We cannot be able to talk about it now. Now, when coming to the two possible scenarios that we have spoken about, the premiers and the welfare services, it's an issue that we are currently engaging the relevant sectors in this regard. We're engaging the president, we're engaging the structures, you know, that are relevant to ensure that, you know, we see how we move forward. That the discussions will determine, you know, the direction that we want to take, because it's not a decision that we cannot take, you know, alone as a department. Yes, I think it is important to note that this plan of action, the implementation of plan of action, is not solely the responsibility of social development, but it has got different government departments, you know, to the role of government departments to play, and we are monitoring, and those government departments, you know, are looking at the indicators that are relevant to their mandate, and as the Department of Social Development coordinate. I'll hand over to Ketan to look at some of the issues that have been raised. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. In addition, there was also a question on whether the targets that are in the plan are specific and how we intend to monitor them. All the targets that are mentioned in the plan are indeed specific, and they are also now put in the MTSF. Because they now are in the MTSF, it also then means all government departments whose indicators are in the MTSF, these must also find in the APPs of those departments. So when government departments present their annual reports, those indicators are therefore reported both in the MTSF but also within the annual reports for the plan. What we have also done is to improve on the area of disaggregation of data. We are now able to be specific, especially around issues of disability, around issues of children in rural areas, around issues of children that are based in informal settlements. So this is one of the great impact of having such a plan, wherein we insist on having proper disaggregation. There was also a comment and question around discipline, which is a problem. Wherever we mention the issue of child rights, we also always mention the issue of responsibilities. So in the manual that we have just finalized, even the duty bearers
they are now learning on how to balance the issue of rights and also ensuring that those rights do not interfere with other people's rights, so as to improve the issue of improving the also improving the respect of other people's rights. There was also a question around specific social ills. In the report, Chairperson, that we have provided to the committee this morning, both reports actually make observations on such areas as violence against children, substance abuse, poverty, teenage pregnancy, disability, access to education, malnutrition, issues of hunger, issues within the ECDs, some of the excluded children. What the report then does with these areas, there are areas wherein we are highlighting progress that we are making as a country. And we are also making areas, we are also highlighting areas where there are still challenges and gaps. We have also put a list of areas where we need to do more analysis. For example, we are still interested to find out the role of COVID-19 in child-headed households, whether there is any impact on how COVID-19 has contributed to the livelihoods of those children that head households, and how even children are affected in their ability to attend school because of COVID-19. So what then this report does, it's to raise questions that allow policy makers to make interventions to address these comments. So I would like to stop here. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
No, thanks very much, colleagues, for that. I think on the rider is that, as we have alluded, we would like to be allowed to present the report with details of what members have requested here as to show the implementation of the plan. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Acting. Those are the questions, honourable members, that we asked. The department has tried to answer them. Is there anything that we need on this presentation so that we can go to the next presentation?
Chairperson, it's Minister Zulu.
Okay, Minister.
Thank you very much, Chair, and I wish to thank the members for their questions. They are quite substantial, and I propose, as Peter has indicated, I fully agree with the members, and the department will say that I've been saying it's important that when we're making these presentations, we need to be able to show, as Honorable Abrahams was saying and Honorable Lizelle were saying, that we're good at producing these plans. It's important for us to produce the plans, and it's important for us to have plans so that we are able to implement something that is tangible. What I think should happen, as Peter indicated, is that we should come back to the portfolio committee in terms of the operational plans. How are we going to implement this, and what's the budget, and all that. But also, I do want to indicate that from a social development point of view, we are trying our best to make sure that other relevant departments, in fact, my view, as I've been saying this all the time, is that all other departments are important in ensuring that we create a conducive environment for the children to be able to live in an environment that is conducive for them, and therefore all other departments are very important. The monitoring and evaluation in the presidency in particular has been making the kind of demands from us as all departments to make presentations, all of us across the board, I'm not just talking about social development, all other departments to make their presentations with regard to children, but also with regard to women and youth, because we are expected, all of us as government overall, to show how, what exactly we are doing to implement our programs with regard to improving the lives and livelihoods of the children. So we will come back, Chairperson, and make that presentation, which in my view might also tap into what other departments are doing. You know, I know that our timetable is very full, but I think considering the importance of children and considering that children really should grow up in a better environment than the one we have right now, we will come back and make the presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. That's it, Honourable Members. Can you allow me to proceed to the Mangali?
Yes, Chair. I'm sorry to yes, I wanted to say it will be good for us next time to talk more about the teenage pregnancy, because it's the social development only that is dealing with that. Other departments, we don't see that. Thank you.
Okay. Can we catch into the next department? Thank you very much, Honorable Mangana. Next presentation.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I will now ask Acting DDG Taban Vitalis to take us through the first quarter report of the department. Over to you, Taban.
Good morning. Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, Minister, Deputy Minister, and the colleagues. Can I press? Yes, I will be taking you through the requested department come and present the Kirot April 1st and the date yet of June 2022. Minister, I think it covered some of the issues highlighted here, that this is the first period of what is contained in the APP that Minister tabled in April, and that is aligned to other plans that we have, including the NPSF, the 5-year strategic plan, the national annual strategic plan, the minister's performance report, and also what we try and do with our plan as we align them to also make sure that they start reporting to what we receive from this portfolio committee in terms of the bid for that. So in a nutshell, that's what we are trying to do. And as you would see, what typically the first quarter usually starts low, and the performance is usually lower, but you see that with this current plan, with this current quarter, the department really tried and achieved much better than as compared to other quarters. And there are reasons, of course, that the Portfolio Committee has been observing, that the department seems to have not dropped in terms of performing below 80%, and it's because of the commitments that we have made, the dedication that has been displayed, by not only the officials, but also some of the game changers and things that we have introduced to make sure that we are able to turn the corner. And one of them, of course, has been the extent to which we are spending more time in terms of giving more time towards planning, because as you spend more time towards planning, there are things that we are able to pick up. One of them, we are making sure that our targets and indicators are smart in terms of they are specific, they are measurable, The committee members have been asking us about impact, the outcome, so we need to make sure that these are measurable. But also not only that, but these are targets that are able to achieve, and they're realistic and also time-bound. And being realistic means they respond to the issues that are always raised by the committee members and the issues that partake around the environment in which we find ourselves. But also, these plans, as we do them now, it's just not only us as DSD. Minister has introduced the whole notion of a portfolio. And as we engage as the national, we make sure that we sit around with our entities. We also engage with our departmental counterparts, with our provincial counterparts, because by and large, we are a national department responsible for policy development, but the implementation of those happens in the provinces. So it's always important for us to understand that there will be these dependencies. And as we speak, is that when we do our plan, it's much easier for us to make sure that they favor an environment in which they will be implemented. But also what we have done in terms of improving our operational environment is to also, Honorable Chairperson and members, that we now conduct a regular performance review. And we do this for two reasons. One is to make sure that we are able to provide the controls and early warning systems so that we are able to detect the risks and the possibility for us not to achieve those particular targets. But as we identify those targets, we are able to also to develop what is called the mitigation strategies in terms of what is it that will be put in place to make sure that those targets are met. Minister has indicated the quarter that you are presenting, I was showing the next two slides, depicts the extent that we have achieved 80% of our targets. We had a total of 48 that was specifically we have specific data specific for Q1, and we have attained just 51 of them, and then with 9 that I will explain that have not been fully achieved by end of March. But finally, what we have done is mainly the management. We have also adopted a common theme where we are striving towards execution excellence. So in whatever that we do, we want to make sure that we achieve the excellence. I will highlight that we have achieved 80%, as that it should be seen as shown in this particular slide of all our targets. I think we need at the forefront, Chairperson and honourable members, to really take you through some of the targets that we did not meet. Because it's important not to only tell the story of what we have achieved, but also to take through the honourable members on some of the areas that by the end of June we had not fully met those particular targets. But I must assure you as well that in as much as the previous quarter that we had and we'll see in the next financial year, there are targets that we did not meet when we came and present to the members the fourth quarter performance, and some of those targets have also been carried over even in this quarter that you are presenting. Others will be met in the subsequent quarters. But for quarter one, there were some of the targets that were not fully met. One of them is relating to the piloting of the digital M&D system. That is a 3-year project, and we have come to present in this portfolio committee. Our target for the first quarter was for us to have conducted the pilots, because the system has been developed, but now it's important that we go to the provinces and test it. And what then became the challenge is that the system is not only collecting information at provincial level, but it must go down to the state. And for us to fully pilot it and get a real sense if it's working well or not, there was lots of information that was required, and it took some time for us to engage with the province up to a district level for them to be ready and for us to have all the information that would be required for us to test the system. But I must give confidence to the portfolio committee members that for now all is on track. Just last week we received some of the confirmation letters from some of the provinces, including KZN, to indicate exactly that they are ready as a province, but they've also just engaged with some of the districts in which you want to test this particular system. Other targets, the next two targets that were not fully met, relate to us building capacity. We had a target to build capacity of 100 social services practitioners. These had to be capacitated on the HIV testing services guidelines. By end of June, we did not meet train the all 100, but we only trained the 8. There were delays insofar as the Northern Cape, and as because we could not finalize the procurement of the outside venue for us to do the training. And we remember, honorable members, there were still some of the issues, including the National Treasury circular and the suspension of procurement due to the court order on that preferential procurement policy. And you see, in some of these targets, this is the same as well as consumer mobilization and empowerment, where we although we went to all the 5 districts that was planned, but the number of specific community development practices that were targeted was not fully met, but these were met in the subsequent quarters. Also, we had committed to do a training of municipalities. But there's been a challenge. We want to train municipalities on the integration of migration issues into their integrated development plans, the IDPs, and this was not fully met because some of the municipalities could not confirm, they could not attend some of the sessions that we had planned. And so this then frustrated us in terms of the actual numbers that we wanted to achieve. But we are currently making a substantial progress. We are engaging as part of the mitigation strategy. We have engaged with SARDA. We are also working with COPTA to make sure that we are able to reach these municipalities, because FDST, we found it very, very difficult to get a full buy-in and for them to participate. Some then of the last 4 targets that were not fully met, they relate mainly to the issues of legislation. One was the for us to have completed all the consultations insofar as the draft SASA amendment bill, as well as the draft social development bill. These were not fully achieved. And because we did not do the full, we did not conduct the full consultation, but what we were able to do, it took some time for us to do the screening and the assessment so that we are ready when it comes for us to do the consultation. The other ones relate to the Children's Amendment Bill, and I know the portfolio committee members are very close to this. We target to publish it, but this could not be achieved as the draft is being consulted with some of the stakeholders. So there's been some more consultation for us and not to have published it by end of the third quarter. On the NPO bill as well, it was supposed to have been consolidated for public comments. And the bill was advertised in May, and the comments are still being received, and we felt we need still to give time for us to get more input so that we're able to consolidate it. We are making progress insofar as the NDA amendment bill, although by end of the third quarter we did not do the full consultation, but we are happy that there are some consultations that we are still doing, and we continue with this, and we will then make sure that we provide substantial reports in the subsequent quarters. So on the social crime prevention and substance abuse, what need to be achieved was for us to obtain a CR certificate, and by end of the first quarter this was not achieved. But how we have crafted this in the APP is to make sure that even the second quarter, because as part of the lessons was this year's process sometimes takes quite a while, so we've allowed the target that it could be achieved between the first and the second. So these are then the targets, honorable chairperson and members, that we felt we need at the forefront and bring them up to say these are targets that were not achieved, so that you don't only look at the 80% achievement, but we need to be truthful and say these ones, do we have some challenges in terms of following the meeting. Now I'll be moving in and give a detail at the high level, a presentation on then what is it that we're able to achieve. I'll move from one problem to the next. The first one of the issues portfolio committee members have been saying so that we are able to report on the impact. Has been the issues relating to our capacity as a national department to conduct oversight. You remember even over here, the issues with SASA and all these grants. What we have done then to make sure that we are providing that leadership as the mother board in the short of a better way, that we are able to develop an entity governance and oversight framework. So as national, this is what we have developed, and it assists us to provide oversight in our entities, being SASA, NTA, as well as the CPA. And we have made sure that some of the elements have been conducted in that particular regard. So that particular space, we are indeed really moving towards that. So by end of the following quarter, there's been quite a number of activities that have happened as part of implementation of that oversight framework that we have developed. We have quarterly reports where it demonstrates the engagement that we are having with both SASA and this. And this report, they get to be rooted to both our principals, the minister, as well as the DM. We have had four oversight forum meetings with all our entities, including the Council of Social Service Professionals, and this seems to be working. The second area, one of the lessons we have learned as a department, starting from the COVID, is a sense to which it becomes difficult as government, in particular social development, which gets overstretched to provide these much needed services. So say, how then do we work better with other key stakeholders? So as a department then, to make sure that we are able to, as part of the impact, to make sure that we are able to augment some of the very, very debilitated funds that are there for government and our capacity, we have made sure that we strengthen our capacity to work with various stakeholders, and also in as far as donor coordination. We have seen how we have even managed to receive some of the donations from various players, including the sanitary towels, from the PNG, some of the money that have been bought, that have been benefiting to some of the destitute areas in spaces of disaster and so forth. And what we did then was to make sure that we have a very functional stakeholder and donor management strategy that we have developed. And by now, we have a whole list in our database of those relevant stakeholders that we know at any time that we are short, we don't have capacity, we can't reach, we are able to, at the press of a button, engage them for them to give us assistance. This could be in a form of kindness and also so in terms of the technical expertise that we do require from time to time. Moving on, under monitoring and evaluation, one of the issues that have come as we report in terms of our MTSF, the Minister's Performance Agreement, DPM, is that one of the things that the country needs to have is what is referred to as a social welfare index, because it then allows us to make sure that as a state, we are capable to meet the basic needs of our citizens. And also through this social welfare index, we'll make sure that we know the building blocks that allow the citizens and communities to enhance and sustain the quality of life that they want to pursue, and to enable them to make sure that they are able to reach their full potential. So internationally, this would be referred to as a social development index. Others will call it a social welfare index. So we are in the space of developing that. So what our commitment is to come up with a concept document that by now, during this period, I can assure the honourable members that we have then developed consultation sessions with various stakeholders so that we begin to come up with that particular concept in terms of how we come up with the social welfare index, which at some point we'll be able to present it. And the finance, one of our key objectives, the impact that we want to make, is to make sure that department continue and obtain an unqualified audit opinion, so that and as we do that, we make sure that we are reducing irregular progress and wasteful expenditure in the department to ensure that they comply. So when we take our report, our finances to AJSA, this is what we want to receive that. So actually what then we do on quarterly basis to make sure that the annual financial statements, which then are retrospective for 2022, are submitted for auditing, and we're able to do that by May. On insofar as the information management systems and technology, one of the key things that is also contained within the MTSF, including the minister's performance agreement, is our ability. As DSD, we've been given the responsibility to coordinate the social protection agenda. And as we provide as government these various social protection interventions, we want to make sure that then we are, as a department, building, or the country has what is referred to as a national integrated social protection information system, so that we are able to tell the story of all these investments that government is making in the life of the poor, in the life of the children, and those that are vulnerable. So if a child is receiving a grant, to what extent does that child also is able to access other services, including an office school and so forth. So this particular system is what we need to build, and using a unique unifier, what we have as an ID number. Using this ID number, you're able to say, these are some of the social protection interventions that that particular individual is receiving. So this is a system that we are building. It's not been an easy one. We have not been performing well over the years regarding this. But I must indicate that this is receiving momentum. We're working with the DPME to coordinate. We are engaging with CISA as well to assist us in this particular space, because as a country, we are moving towards digitization of all our services, and we hope if that it becomes then coordinated at that level. And it's not just about DSD, it involves other government sector departments, your health, your basic education, and so forth. On human capital, one of the issues that the minister indicated is the whole plight of even members when they ask questions on the first presentation is relating to the issues of inavailability of social workers or the unemployment of social workers. Well, what then we've done to make sure that we have this capacity to assist government and the country to respond to these social issues that seem to be stubborn and growing over time, and also to be there and responsive when we have disasters and any other elements. We have then developed a government-wide strategy on the employment of social service professionals. And we view this as just not only a DSD agenda, but it requires all government departments. And as I speak for the first time as a department, we've been able to bring around the table government departments. And we have, just last month, submitted the UNU in terms of the unbudgeted bid for Treasury to consider, because we really feel the social workers, that having them is not an option, but it is a necessity given what the country has been going through in the recent period, either from the climate change or some of the unrest that you've seen taking place in many of the countries. And the local services, before I conclude on program one, is related to the, we've been coming and present to this portfolio committee on the victim support services bill, which needs to be submitted to cabinet for approval. And what we wanted to do in the period under review was the processing of all the comments that we have received from the Office of the State Law Advisor, and this has been successfully done, and it's been sent back now to the Office of the State Law Advisor. And with this, we want to make sure that this bill, once it's approved by cabinet, will make sure that we protect the rights of all the victims directly that are all in terms of making sure that they're receiving the service provider dealing with the victim to treat them accordingly in terms of preventing dignity and respect regardless of their citizenship, race, culture, as well as gender, religious, and personal circumstances. So once that bill is approved, we'll make sure that it doesn't discriminate. Moving to social assistance, this is just about DSD making sure that it avails the money that we receive from Treasury for SASSA to be able to make sure that it pays all the eligible beneficiaries in terms of these various grants that we have in the country. So in the period under review, the DSP on this quarter, it was 62.7 billion that we had to avail for SASSA to be able to pay. And for us to provide these grants, I think the impact has been noted, reported, and re-emphasized over time, because with this, we are able to make sure that we are contributing towards the reduction of poverty, but also reducing the income inequality through this grant. But what also we have seen, especially insofar as these children's grants, in particular the CSG, are these positive impacts that it has in making sure that our children have got better nutritional outcomes, because it means the primary caregivers, who are mostly women, receiving these grants are able to make good decisions for their children, making sure that they put food, but also they attend school. So these are some of the impacts that has been recorded widely, and which we continue to see from some of the empirical evidence that we continue to do and evaluation for to do. On social security, which is now program 3, honorable members, this is a space in which as a department we develop quite a number of policies and legislations insofar as comprehensive social security. So there's been quite a number of them. There were about 4 policies that we developed under this quarter with one. But most important one, they are all important, of course. Number one is a policy that we have made sure that we have, for all these policies, we have done consultations. And these consultations have been done insofar as different forums, for example, the National Child Care and Protection Forum. We have also consulted with department, with other government departments, for example, Home Affairs. But also what is quite important is that we have also consulted with beneficiaries themselves. One area that we went to was Mamelodi, which is here in Gauteng. And some of these policies include, for example, the policy on integrating the child grant beneficiary with other government services. For us is to make sure that the government to say, as the government provides these grants to these children, but also they don't fall within the crack. They are not left out for them to access other services. What does it mean to be a grant recipient and we are out of school and they're not able to access health services? So these are some of the issues that this policy speaks to make sure that there's a seamless integration of our services and systems and government, but to make sure that our people don't fall between the cracks. One important piece of work that we're doing as well, where with the high unemployment rate, especially for those who are over 18, young people who form the majority of them, but there's always been this policy gap in terms of the lack of social security provision for the 18 to 59, unless you've got a disability. But so then what we are trying to do, how then do we start providing the basic income support, especially for these? And you understand now there's the SRD 350, which came as a result of the COVID, but it's been seen as some form of what others would term as a BIG and so forth. But there's policy work that you are doing to make sure that how then are the policy proposals on the income support for these cohort, which is between the 18 and 59 year olds. We are also completed consultations on the policy on maternal support for vulnerable pregnant mothers and children. We've completed those particular consultations. One case of order that we engaged with was the Grow Great, which is an NPO that deals with the malnutrition and stuntness of children. And you'll understand how some of these unfortunate and unwarranted episodes that have been reported insofar as the stunting of children. So as we then do this, because there could be some maternal support, when we focus on the first 1,000 days of the child, it means from conception, we want to make sure that we start supporting those children just from that element when they are still just after concession. So this policy proposal also makes some of those particular recommendations so that we are dealing with the issues of child sadness and malnutrition that seem to be very much unwarranted given the state in which we are as a country. There's also a policy on voluntary cover for retirement and risk benefits for atypical informal sector workers. So the draft policy has been updated. Engagement with the women in informal employment in particular has been concluded, but also the globalization organization, which is a UN Women Health, we were able to conduct under the time. On the social security bill, as a department, we're able in the period under review to conduct consultations, not only with the academic from VET, but also from with the International Labour Organization and the currently and also the technical review team on the green paper on comprehensive social security. And we want to make sure that through these policies, it changes that the whole rights of our comprehensive social security, including issues that have been raised relating to staff and so forth. So this is what then is intended through these policies in terms of it. As we provide the social security as well, one of the areas that we wanted to make sure as a department in terms of what then becomes our intent for the impact is to make sure that our social assistance is able to provide an effective and efficient access to social assistance, but not only it, but in the states where people seem to have been excluded, they've got the right to appeal. So hence, as a department, then we have established the social assistance appeal, and there are two main targets that our report. One is to make sure that all the appeals that we receive, we're able to adjudicate 70% of them and within 90 days. And I can say that this was overachieved. Of all, in the period under review, we have received 300 and 98% of those were able to be reviewed. And that then shows that we want to improve in terms of our efficiencies and make sure that as government, we are accessible and people have got the rights as well to appeal in the states where they say they've been excluded unfairly. Also, on the inspectorate, you remember, Chairperson, that the President promulgated on this. And as that department, you want to make sure that you are able to produce and close the report, mainly focusing on the disability grant medical review processes. And we can report that there were two audit planning documents that were planned for Q1, and these, both of them have been completed. And this is a system description on disability grant medical review process. The secondly is on the project analysis and audit program on disability grant medical review processes. Now, I've completed the three first program 1, 2, and 3. I'm moving now to program 4, which is welfare services. There are a number of legislations relating to children as well as their families, which is one of the units that we have. And I can just report in terms of the progress. Under this review, some of the high-level achievements included that the department was able to revise the white paper on families. And this was presented at the National Child Care and Protection Forum. Also, as a department, we're able to provide capacity building to about 724 child protection sector workforce. And our focus was on the children's act. We, as a department, as well, through the welfare services, were able to develop some tools to monitor our contribution in the implementation of the integrated school health programs. I remember honorable member Abrams asked about what is that the department is doing insofar as teenage pregnancy. And this is one of the issues that we are responding and making sure that we're able to curb that sketch and follow some of the reports that were there. And this then begins to show the issues that I've said, that some of the targets that will come up, they are realistic. It means they are in touch with what is happening within an environment. But also another program that is there to deal with issues of teenage pregnant. There is the Sinovuyo Teen Parent Digital Program, and we are targeting young people there and to make sure that the issues of teenage pregnancy are addressed. But there's quite a number of them. We also have other social behavioral change programs, which include targeting young girls, you only live once, Diolo, you've got Dream, and quite a number of them. And some are led by our deputy minister, I'm sure, in the space of responses, if questions continue, we'll be able to provide more details. But also we have developed during this period a monitoring tool on the family prevention program. On SIVH, there's quite a number of programs that we do, and mainly relate to issues of capacity building. And these interventions, we're doing them within the G2G, which is a government-to-government program in partnership with USAID partners. One, we are targeting the orphans, you vulnerable children and youth in districts, in various districts, and we provide them with the core package of services. And the core package of services is a package that has been put together to make sure that we are able to improve the life of the child by building them capacity and mobilizing the protective resources available so that these children are able to meet their needs. So this is what we are doing. We have reached quite a number of obviously why I said these are often vulnerable children and youth. We had a target of 5,000, but by end of the first quarter, we had reached 17,950. In the next slide, we had also reached quite more than what we had planned. We had planned to reach 40%. And this one, in this slide, you could see one of the things we want to, it's about those that they know about their HIV data. So we had also targeted 40%, but by end of the first quarter, we had reached 63%. And it's quite important that we are able to, important for them to know their status to ensure that the opportunities that are there are not missed. So that if there's a space for us to refer them for ARVs, they are able to be referred, especially once they are discovered to be positive. So we've got that particular obligation, and we have been able to build capacity, and we seem to have reached more than what we had targeted. Another target, the last one under HIV/AIDS, was for us to provide support to all the orphans and vulnerable children and youth with HIV positive status to adhere to treatment. We had targeted 50%, but by this time we had been able to support 91% of all the orphans and vulnerable children, especially those that we know that are HIV positive, and to adhere to the treatment. And the plan here is to make sure that we comply with an initiative of the UNAIDS, which is a 95-95, hence then there is a high performance in so far as that particular area. Continuing with the children's services, there's quite a number of work that we are doing around this area, relating to issues of adoption. I know it's been a very issue in terms of who then access what would the space of the poor or those who don't have means. And what we have done as a department is to make sure that we build the capacity. So during the period under review, we had trained 126 social workers on the adoption policy framework and strategy. And we're doing this to make sure that the adoption services, as I said, are just not only for those with the means, but they are accessible to even those that who don't have them. We have conducted quite a number of national workshops as well, insofar as these issues, number one, in relation to the monitoring tool implementation of the guidelines for community-based prevention and early intervention services for vulnerable children. And this tool is there to assist in rendering the uniform and making sure that our services are standardized especially for those that relate to the overseas, including the core package for services and guidelines. Also, another workshop that we have done is with regard to the intersectoral protocol of management of violence, child abuse, neglect, and exploitation. And with this tool, as a department, we are doing it to make sure that it assists us with standardizing and making sure that the uniform services for all the children that are affected by violence is the same as the one that I've alluded to previously. But also, finally, we have developed a number of quarterly reports on the implementation of the program for action on foster care. And the impact that we're intending to have here is making sure that we're able to put in place all the required systematic mechanisms in the provinces for the provision of foster care services to make sure that we are reducing the challenges that are currently experienced in the implementation of the foster care services. And this is what we've been able to conclude. On the professional services on older persons, one of the key targets that we have here, members will recall that as a department, we're a department that doesn't have one single thing like in terms of the Social Development Act. And one the part of the work that we started to do was on the white paper. So in the period under review, we have developed a readiness assessment tool on the implementation of the white paper. And once this is done, this is what then it will lead to the promulgation of the Act. The department, quite a lot of interventions that we have as part of our response to issues of social crime and other substance abuse. And one of them is to continue to engage, because one thing that we do is nationally to engage with the provinces, with the various stakeholders, in terms of building them capacity to implement the strategies, the guidelines and the policies that we have. And one of those strategies is the anti-gangsterism strategy. And working with SARS and other agencies, we are clear that there are 9 high-risk areas, high-risk districts. And during this period, we've been able to develop a project plan, and we have contacted with various stakeholders so that we are able to implement it in these particular 9 high-risk districts. We have also conducted a number of education and awareness campaigns. And on the prevention, on the provision of prevention and early intervention measures to curb the social ill, and we have targeted institutions of higher learning. And under in the period under review, for example, Honorable Chairperson, the department went to Buffalo City College, as well as the St. Mark's College, they are both in the Eastern Cape. We also went to University of Limpopo. We also went to conduct this educational awareness campaign in Waterfront Boven Tivet College, which is in the Western Cape, and also we went to Mpumalanga campaign, and we did some of the awareness campaigns in the Durban University of Technology, and as well as Mangosuthu in the province of KwaZulu-Natal. Also, Chairperson, if I remember, when it comes to universal treatment curriculum, which is implemented in all the public treatment centers, we have been able to develop a project plan so that that is being implemented. And this has been making sure that we're able to build capacity of the 4 provinces and 2 government cluster departments so that they're able as well, able to implement the National Drug Master Plan. And finally, we have developed a project plan to prepare a capacity building on the police on the provision of psychosocial support services, which has been a very, very important intervention that the department has been able to provide, especially in the spaces of shocks and all these disasters that we have experienced recently. The last presentation is the presentation that come from the Office of the Rights of the Child, and one of the targets that we had was to develop what Minister has asked us, that often we always hear and we see that there's always this arbitrary relationship between what is social and what is economy. And one of the things that she had asked us to do was to develop what she had termed the state of the estates of the people reported. That's what we have done. But here, I'm here to report on the report on the rights of the child, and which will also include the rights of children. And as well, but what we have been able to do is to develop a draft state party report, and I think DT indicated that this is one of the reports that we could come and present after we receive the invitation from the portfolio committee. On services to persons with disabilities, there are just two main targets. One, we have been able to develop a project plan on the implementation of the guidelines on respite care that we're able to do. The project is aligned to the respite care implementation plan and the activities that both project sites. The project sites are in the Northern Cape as well as the Mpumalanga, and this is the work that I've been able to conclude. And the annual target is for us to capacitate the four provinces, and as you could see in the first two, in the first quarter, we're able to come up with a project plan, and we'll be able to implement in both Mpumalanga as well as the province of the Northern Cape. And at the heart of this is to ensure that the mechanisms and resources are put in place for the effective implementation of all these particular guidelines that are there for to provide the respite care services for parents and families of children with disabilities that would require such services. The second one is relating to us having committed to conduct a needs assessment towards development of a community-based system for personal assistance to support independent living within the community for persons with disabilities, and this has been fully achieved. Now moving to the last program through you, Chatterson, is one program that I already alluded to, that within our social policy program, for the first time we wanted to develop what is, we have termed as the state of the people, the state of the people of South Africa, so that we are able to bridge this gap between what is economy and what is social, so that there is an alignment to know that do we fit this budget of what the budget has been said, if we look at what are the issues that are dealing with people. And this report then stretches from the definition of poverty, the definition exactly. We understand in South Africa is multidimensional, it's multi-phenomenal, but we try and unpack it. And what then are the responses that government has been able to make sure that we are responding to some of the forms on issues of poverty as well as the inequality. And so during the first quarter, we've been able then to identify what then would be the sources of data that we need to use that are reliable, but also we have started conducting the research review in terms of what then becomes the state of our people of South Africa. On poverty alleviation, there's quite a number of programs that we have, and this includes that we've been able on our food security program. As a department, we were able to provide the quarterly report on the implementation of the National Food and Nutrition Security Plan that we were able to produce. We understand exactly that this has a great impact. As a department, we have seen a high demand for food in the recent years, as well all the wars that are happening and the petrol prices that are escalating. So we have then had to develop that security, that food, national food and nutrition security plan. We have also been able, as our target, to submit the sustainable livelihood framework to different forums, and we are able to get to different forums, including our own management, such as within the department, such as the MENCO, has been presented there. We have been able as a department as well, one of the areas that we wanted to do was to develop, design and implement an evaluation study on the sustainable livelihood program. And during this period, we've been able then to collect data in the five focal provinces. We went to Eastern Cape, Free State, Gauteng, Limpopo, and Northwest, as part of the evolution study that you are doing on sustainable level program. There are various policies as well, Honorable Chairperson, Minister and Honorable Members, that we have developed under Council Development Program. Some relate to the work that we're doing on community development practice and consumer valorization. During this period, as a department, we were able to draft the National Community Development Policy, and we're using the input that we've received from from various stakeholders. And at the heart of this policy is about clarifying the roles of all the key stakeholders and the institutional mechanisms that are existing, so that we have very effective and efficient delivery of community development services towards building vibrant, equitable, cohesive, as well as sustainable communities. A total of 58 community development practitioners have been trained on community development practices methodologies during this period, but also we were able to finalize the community mobilization empowerment program. And the aim of this is to make sure that it provides assistance in the facilitation and addressing the complex social issues that are experienced by our various communities, and also to make sure that these communities are provided with enough capacity and skills so that they're able to drive their own solutions that are required for them, so that they're able to transform. On youth development, there are two targets that we have included as a department. Through our program, we've developed a youth policy monitoring and evaluation tool during this period. And finally, we have been able to develop a DFT youth skills development implementation plan. And this policy, we are sure that it will provide an opportunity for us to coordinate and develop youth development programs and interventions that are of greater impact in the lives of young people who are currently the majority of the unemployed and those that have been exposed to all many social ills that they are having. And finally, before I hand over through you, Chairperson, to my colleague, the acting CFO, to take us through the expenditure report, is to report on the work that we continue to do insofar, because this is one of the direct services that we provide as national in terms of building capacity, processing the applications, processing even the reports of the non-profit organizations and all these NGOs that are there. And I won't then go to the details, but suffice to say, for all the reports that we have, all the applications that we received, we were able to process 98% of them, and also equally on all the reports as part of their compliance as expected by the NPO Act, we were able to process 87.9%, and we were able to build capacity to various NPOs that are there. And the next slide then just give disaggregate exactly what applications were received, how many were processed, and I won't go through that detail, including the type of reports. But through you, Chairperson, I can hand over to my colleague so that you finalize this report and go to from slide 45, which then is a summary of our expenditure in the report and a review. Thank you so much.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Minister, and Minister. If we look at the first quarter report for the department in terms of the allocations that we received for the 2023 financial year, our allocation has increased from the prior year financial of 234 to 257 billion for this financial year. Our first quarter expenditure is only 21.22%, that accumulates to 54 billion for the first quarter of the financial year. And when I come to the various slides, I will explain why is the reason for the lower high spending in the various programs. We felt it also good that we illustrate how that we spend monthly in terms of the first quarter. You can see for the first and the second month of the financial year, there was 17.5 million. And then in June, we've increased that to 19.1 million. That's the first 2 months of the financial year, we're all aware of what we're back, which we serve, but it picked up in the June, end of the first quarter, that we picked up the expenditure for the 350 grant. The various expenditures for the programs, we can see that for administration of 28, it's slightly higher in terms of the average spending. It more than relates to some of the accruals that we had to pay for the prior financial year, that we ensured that what invoices we received in March should be paid within 30 days, and that's why some of the things relate to the accruals for Program 1. On social assistance, 21% spending. I've already explained that there was a delay in the 350, that's why it's only 21% spending. The Social Security and Administration Unit, there we pay our normal SASSA administration. Terms of that we transfer on a monthly basis. For welfare services, you could see there's a significant drop in terms of the allocation. In the prior year for welfare services, we had the additional grant allocation for the ECD as a credit of 1.2 billion. That has been moved to DBE, so our welfare services only sits now with normal transfers to the national councils that they have to pay. And then for Social Security Policy Administration, the 359 million spending is already 44% in terms of this allocation, and that is because we've already transferred the first 60% of the NDA to the first quarter of the financial year. The economic classification, our CFE, 25% is within part in terms of the average spending. The amount that we have there for Syria is under 24 million, spent between 5 and 7 million. Our goods and services, 415 million, expenditure only at 19%. The transfers, you can clearly see where the underspending at least in terms of our NPOs, 0%. In the first quarter, we have a transfer of any funds to our 33 NGOs. They have received their allocation letters. Because they received their first payment in the prior financial year, they need to provide progress reports before we do the second tranches for this financial year. And our CAPEX, we did procure some software. You can see the next year, the 3.9 million under spending, but we will correct that as part of the adjusted estimates. If we then spread out the all transfer payments from the normal operational things, clearly see there's about 23% spending on operational budget, that's now for our CRE goods and services and CAPEX. When we just give you an indication how much we spent in terms of our CRE goods and services, we can see that our compensation is fairly stable in terms of your current establishment. Our goods and services, there was a drop in the second and the third month because we had to pay accruals in the first month. Just in terms of the various programs, next slide. You can clearly see that there's underspending on our life functions for social security, welfare services at program 5, social policy. It's up below the average spending of 35%. The economic classification, Jefferson, you can see that we've already presented this in terms of one of the other tables. It's just a different illustration. And you can see our transfers currently. That it relates to households that we pay provision for people that retire. And some of people have retired already and then they have to pay some of these things in the first quarter. The various explanations, as I already mentioned, for Program 1 administration, it relates to accrual payments that we had carried over from the prior financial year. Our social assistance, we're still paying 18 million beneficiaries. Now, included just normal ones. And then there's the 44 billion that we've received additional for the SRD 350, which almost tracks to about 10 million beneficiaries. And then we've only started paying in June. For Social Security Policy Administration, it's almost 25% spending. We do the monthly transfers to SASSA. Inspector still remains an issue currently for us. We have submitted the international treaty is going to cost the customers quite a significant amount to establish the secret, which requires funding. At this stage, we are busy lobbying national treaties that we can see how we could get additional funding for the inspectorate for going forward for the establishment. For welfare services, the operational spending is currently at 70% spending. We all know that some of the main cost drivers in this unit in terms of the events that will take place in the second and the third quarter, like the older persons, the older games, the social development month and such, will only happen in the second and the third quarter of the financial year. For social policy, the 44% spending, I've already explained that we've dropped from 60% to the NDA, which amounts to 31 million in this first quarter. The next two slides just use the illustration how we project, how we would spend in terms of our COE versus what we actually spend. We could see that our COE currently just for the first 3 months, it's already above the average spending that we projected. And we have to clearly monitor in terms of this that we do not overshoot our COE for this financial year. Although this steep increase going forward in the latter part of the financial year, but we are bound by the national treaty to ensure that we stick with our impression for COE and be doing everything in our power to ensure that this is done. Our goods and services. Again, we made some proposals on how we would spend our goods and services. The next slide. Now this is the previous one. Yeah. Now goods and services versus projected versus actual. It's going down, but it's also an area we will monitor on a monthly basis to ensure that we will stick with our operation budget for our goods and services. This is probably the area that we have maneuvered to move from this funding if we want to shift funding to our off to our pay kits. But at this stage, it's not feasible in terms of the allocation that we have. Then just illustration of our various programs, looking just at goods and services. You can clearly see for program 3, 4, and 5, in terms of percentage spending, it's very low, but we do monitor this on a monthly basis against the procurement plans that we've submitted to the National Treasury. We've also looked at the what is in terms of the requirements of the ATP, and we do monitor this on a monthly basis and we do make the necessary adjustments. The main cost drivers currently that we had in the first quarter of the financial year relates to our, again, our telecom account. We still pay for the toll-free number from the Sasa. We are going to claim this back from Sasa. In the prior year, it was also an issue because the financial year has ended. We ended up paying for this expense, but we are in the process of Sasa to take this account over. Unfortunately, we have to do a procurement process to ensure there's compliance in terms of this. That's one of the biggest cost drivers in terms of our first quarter. And also, if you look at our traveling and our subsistence, about 12 million. We have started to start more engagement with our provinces, being more again visible with our footprint in the provinces, and that's why there's an awesome increase in our travel and subsistence. Jefferson, thank you very much. This concludes our report for the first quarter of the financial year.
Thank you very much. Are you done?
Yeah. Yeah. Check this in. We are done.
Okay. Thank you very much. Look, but it's a long, long presentation, eh? Okay. Can I give over to the honorable member to interact with the presentation? Very long. Honorable sir. Honorable sir. followed by Honorable Alex Danze. Am I audible?
Yes, Chair, I can hear you from my side.
Okay. Why Honorable Lizelle is not talking? Can you find out, Lindy?
I'll give you a question.
Okay. Let's give over to Honorable Alexandria for now.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the department for the presentation. Chairperson, my comments and questions are as follows. So slide 24, you know, speaks about all the monitoring tools the department is going to develop, you know, the tool for the family presentation, the tool for the teen digital, parent digital program, etc. So my question to the department is, you know, it's my understanding that these programs are already being implemented. So why are we only now developing tools to monitor retrospectively? You know, it's my understanding that these tools and monitoring tools should be developed beforehand in order for us to record and extract data and for accurate measurements and tracking of these programs. So is this just the norm that we only develop the monitoring tools after the fact, after the programs are implemented, or what is the reason for that? Then, Chairperson, with regard to the MPOs, and while I largely understand a lot of the TPA agreements are done within the provinces, I just would like to understand our MPO tool, the platform, is it only for registration and for tracking of financial reports and what's this other word, compliance, or is there scope on this MPO platform to actually track the amount of funding that the NGOs are receiving from the various departments and spheres of government in order for us to avoid, you know, double and triple dipping by some NGOs? So I just would like to find out if that platform actually tracks that information. And then, Chairperson, you know, I read recently that the Gauteng province, their director for, I think, MPO came out, you know, and said that they'll be looking at more insourcing rather than, you know, going out to NGOs for the services. And, you know, while his comments were largely due to non-compliance of the NGOs, and I'm not disputing that NGOs need to be compliant, you know, especially after the department, you know, gives them help and, you know, try to get this compliance. But I'd just like to find out from the national department, is that their stance as well? Because we've always, you know, understood that the relationship between NGOs and the department is that the department's reliant on these NGOs to carry out the bulk of the services. And when we look at the spending of employees, the cost of spending of employees, we already see that we are tracking much higher than what is projected. So I'd just like to hear from the department, is that also their stance, or is it the independent stance of the Gauteng region that, you know, they'll be doing more insourcing of social welfare service than relying on the NGO sector? And the reason I also raise this, Chairperson, because we see the departments also underspend, you know, when it comes to NPOs. And I'm of the opinion that there are so many NPOs doing such amazing work that, you know, if funds are being returned to Treasury because MPOs are just simply non-compliant, what efforts are done to then approach the NGOs that would then necessarily be compliant so that the money is not returned back just based that certain NGOs aren't being compliant. And then, you know, with that chairperson, if maybe the department can respond as to what were the delays for their MPO transfers, if it also got to do with compliance issues and what steps they are putting in place to make sure that they don't return any budgets when it comes specifically to social welfare. And then just last two points, Chairperson, if we can maybe just get some more clarity on this overspend $33 million on communications and the fact that SASA is unable to, you know, pay back the money, you know, what's happening there. And then just lastly, Chairperson, I've noted that the department no longer provides a slide on their wasteful and fruitless expenditure. And I've noted that they didn't do this for quarter three, quarter four, and now again in this presentation. And I'd like to find out why the department is not providing us with that information, and if they can then provide us with that information for the quarter three, quarter four, and then for this quarter one as well. And then, oh, sorry, lastly, Chairperson, what were the reasons for the EIA certificate delay and the appeals? The slide said that there were 306 appeals, of which they successfully handled 300 for this quarter. Does this appeals also include the SRD grant? Because I find that number to be very low for the quarter, especially when I know myself and colleagues and, you know, other colleagues on this platform, we are often inundated with complaints and saying that they've sent through the appeals and they haven't heard back. So does this 306 also include the SRD grant? Thank you, Chairperson.
Hello, Unyan. Is it back? If not yet, yes. Let's give Kate.
Can you hear me now?
Okay. Over to you. Yes.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much to Shenge for the presentation. I'm sorry I don't know what happened earlier. I was talking, but clearly talking to myself. But thank you very much, and I would like to start off by saying we note, of course, the increase in the achievement of targets, and I think we need to give credit where credit is due. But again, this presentation feels a lot like the previous presentation that we got. But maybe also I want to ask whether going forward, Chairperson, we could ask the department when they come to us in each of these quarterly presentations, whether they can include just one slide in terms of our social worker crisis. In other words, there's been a lot of talk around the issue of engaging other departments, but I think on a quarterly basis, at least, we need to see one slide that is included on the social worker crisis. In other words, how many do we have in employment currently? How many are not absorbed as yet? And also maybe just with regard to the progress in terms of, you know, our talks or engagements with other departments. That would just be my appeal. I think I've been covered by the Honourable Abrams in terms of the questions around underspending or the delayed transfers to NPOs, because I also wanted to know whether it's only non-compliance that is resulting in us not spending this money or not paying these organisations on time. Because at the end of the day, I think this money stands between life and death for many vulnerable South Africans. And if we return this money to Treasury or it's not paid on time, it actually has a very devastating effect on the most vulnerable in our society. And I recently saw, for example, reports of you know, homes that are looking after vulnerable elderly citizens that are on the verge of closing. And those people will have to go to the streets because they don't have family to look after them. And when you see then money not being spent, it really breaks your heart that you know that there are NGOs and MPOs that are working in the interests of the most vulnerable that are not getting paid or not getting paid on time. And on this question as well, which isn't really got to do with this report before us, but and it's a side question, and I hope that I'll be able to get some answers. But I see that a group representing 3,500 organizations, MPOs and NGOs, have complained that they were left out of the summit that was held, the social sector summit that was held in August. And they were included in previous summits, and I just wanted to know why these organizations were left out. And also, can that compact that the summit came up with, can it really be described as social when a number of these sectors were overlooked? And secondly, I see that the media reports indicated that some of the people at the summit objected to the framework declaration on the ground that it did not actually represent the discussions that were held at that summit. And also, I wanted more clarity in terms of this universal fund that will now, or the single fund that will now be created to channel and distribute civil society monies. And I'm asking this because I do believe that there seems to be a regression in terms of the relationship between the Department of Social Development and our civil society organizations. And I do believe that even though there are problems in terms of compliance, as Honorable Abrams has spoken about, but these organizations do provide vital services on behalf of the state. And I think we need to look into how we rectify or strengthen the relationship between DSD and these organizations. Then I want to speak again on the issue of what we always talk about, and it's the issue of plans versus action. In other words, plans versus real progress on the ground. You know, when I get to the slide where it talks about develop a project plan to implement the universal treatment curriculum at public treatment centers, as well as develop a project plan in consultation with stakeholders to implement the DSD anti-gang strategy. You know, when you read those slides, one gets really worried, because it feels to me then, if we're now talking about developing a plan to implement a strategy, develop a plan to implement a strategy for treatment at treatment centers, then it really begs the question, is nothing happening currently? Because if we're now developing a plan to implement a plan, one really gets worried. And then another question arises, is, you know, if we're developing plans to implement plans, it means that there's no real progress on the ground. And so, you know, it really leaves a person really worried. It's almost like we keep on developing plans, but nothing really changes. And there's a general consensus amongst all of us that social ills are on the increase. So also in terms of these plans that are being developed, I wanted to ask if we can get copies of these plans, because I think it's important for us to be able to oversight those plans in our work. And I will leave it there, Chairperson, for now. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Lisa. Okay.
Thank you very much. And good morning, everyone. Chairperson, the presentation was too long. And I don't think it's really good for us. You listening, you end up forgetting that you're still listening to one presentation. But all in all, thanks for the presentation. Chair, and program one, on slide number 14, which talks about the human capital management. What is the current status of the joint bid to National Treasury on providing finances for the employment of social services professionals? And again, on slide number 15, under legal services, I would like to ask the question that relates to the timeframes. What is the time frame for feedback from the Office of the State Law Advisors on the said bill? And again, under the legal services, What is the plan for consultations of the draft SASSA Amendment Bill and draft Social Development Bill? What are the timeframes in this regard? When will the NPO's comments be consolidated? And what is the approach regarding the reporting of the consultation done on the draft NDA Amendment Bill? On social crime prevention and anti-substance abuse, when will the CAIS certificate be available? And what are the steps required to achieve this? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Polnitz, you are the following honorable member.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, like my colleagues are saying, it was a very long slide, so we couldn't write, I didn't write the slide's main numbers down. I want to speak about the integration of migration issues for the IDP. Chair, as long as our people are going to the towns, like big towns, looking for jobs, they're always going to have the problem of migration. Migration is where people are coming from, the Bantuans, Botswa, Velo, and all the small areas surrounding Bloemfontein in the Free State to come and look for work in Mangaung. So that is the issue that we have to deal with. This is not just because of migration, and the IDP processes are not being implemented properly within the municipalities, because every time there's just more people coming in and leaving. So there's always going to be a backlog when it comes to the IDP. And then I want to speak about the HIV/AIDS that you said that Northern Cape didn't come to the party. I'm worried about that one because I'm deployed in the Northern Cape. And HIV/AIDS is a big crisis within the Northern Cape because people are abusing alcohol a lot in the Northern Cape. And then on the social ills of our communities, I want to know how many drug centers was built. Because if you look at the drug abuse that we're having, just last week on Friday, a young boy came from the rehab center, a private one, you know, this one where they use church, and he came back, he was there for 2 months, and he committed suicide. He is the first boy in the same area where I'm staying that committed suicide, because they come back to the very same environment, the very same friends, the very same realities where they've been taken out because they had a drug problem. They come back and they come use the drugs again. Some of them cannot handle the issues, so they commit suicide. So we lost 3 young boys in a matter of 3 months to this drug abuse, and because they couldn't take the things. Then we talk about teenage pregnancies. You have any centers for young mothers that is pregnant? I want to know how many centers was built around that, and then look at the baby savers. Where did we import, where did we put in these baby savers within the provinces, within the regions that can also assist? And then we're having a problem with the NPOs, especially the NPOs where there's old people and children involved, where the monies have been sent back, but these NGOs are not getting assisted by the department. I have a friend that I assist every week that is having an old age home. The department has been there many times. She's been going there asking for assistance. They are not giving us the guy there. It's my child. They look here. The same people are getting. How do you monitor the NGOs that is so operating and the ones that are closed? Because now you're giving money, but you don't go and check up to see if the NPO is still operating. So that NPO can get money without having any person working there or any person staying there. What is the mechanism that the department is using to make sure the money they are giving to this NPOs are fully operational and there's people staying there and there are people are being accommodated? Because some of the NPOs that really need assistance, they don't get the assistance chairperson. And like the previous speaker was saying, this was a very long presentation. The presentation looked very good, but you cannot focus on everything at the same time. We have to break it up. And because now we are losing track of what is the real issues that we're supposed to look at. So we need to see how we're going to put on these things differently, Chairperson, because seriously, there's too much information at one time, and we are on social media, and there's glitches sometimes, you miss some of the things. So we, the department, had to come up with a way how we're going to deal with this presentation in the future, Chair. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Polnick. Honourable Arms?
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes, you are audible enough. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, Honourable Liesl did raise the issues, the crisis that we are currently facing in terms of social workers. However, the social workers, only that it's not only that there's only a shortage of social workers, but recently you have seen that the social workers are struggling in terms of vehicles. So the department must provide us with a report on that aspect as well, in order for these social workers that is currently in the service to effectively do their work. And then also the department must provide us, must provide us a report on non-profit organizations, because and we also need to know what monitoring systems they have in place to monitor these NPOs, because I know that many of these NPOs are operating but they are not reporting anything to the department. And also the department must provide us with list of NPOs that have that receive funding, so that we know and we can see how funds being distributed to these NPOs. And then also, Chairperson, in terms of, we have recently seen that, like Honourable Punito was saying, there's a lot of, because there's a lack of public rehabilitation centres, which means that our people cannot afford these private rehabilitation centres. And these private rehabilitation centres, people must pay up to 100,000 rand a month in order to get their children in this facility. And people have seen that recently this unregistered drug rehabilitation centers has mushroomed. So I want to find out from the department, what are they going to do about these unregistered drug rehabilitation centers, as our people been, you know, exploited and dehumanized, because these people are living in crumpy circumstances in this unregistered centers. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Arthur. I think there are no hands right now. But my question to the department is that, by the looks of things, looking at this trend of losing money, can you assure us that you are not going to unspend, and there is no money that is going to go back for this financial year, because I'm worried about this expenditure pattern. And what I would like to know, you know, the NGOs always complain about non-payment. What is the problem exactly in terms of non-payment? Thank you very much. At least other questions have been covered and they have been asked. So, thank you.
Feel a hand from
Chairperson, there's still a hand for the Honourable Dehan Stock.
Okay. I'm sorry, Honourable Stock, I missed your hand. I didn't notice it. Over to you.
Okay, no, thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. No, my hand was up, it's just that the system kept on kicking me out. So I had to rejoin, I think. From time to time.
Sorry,
I think that's why maybe you might have missed it. No, Chairperson, thank you very much. I think I just need to indicate that in terms of my understanding, the presentation of the department gives us a synopsis of the departmental performance with regard to the first quarter 2022-2023. And then I've also noted that most of the targets, almost like 80%, have been achieved. And then this 80% which have been achieved for the first quarter have mainly been at the planning stages. And then we also understand that the implementation of what has been planned will be monitored, or maybe the performance might improve in the second quarter onwards. So I just want to appreciate after so far what has happened and the level of progress that have been reported to us. So my issues, I wanted to find out from the department, Honorable Chair, why has Program 2 not been achieved? And I also want to find out regarding targets not achieved in slides 6 and 7, why have those targets not been achieved? And then with regards to monitoring and evaluation, has the department made a risk analysis of the pilot that was meant to start in August 2022? Is there any update since August of this project has been implemented, or maybe it has kick-started? I would appreciate if they can just give us an update as to where do they stand, if there are any challenges or the progress should be noted and so forth. And then with regard to HIV and AIDS, what has been the reasons behind the lack of participation by the Northern Cape? What steps were taken to make senior managers accountable in this regard? What plans have been made to ensure that the target of capacitation, the remainder of the SSPs, is met? And then with regard to community mobilization and empowerment, I would like to find out, can the department advise us on what the way forward will be regarding the shortfalls of community mobilization and empowerment? What is the status on the procurement issues stemming from the National Treasury? What other innovative ways can be explored to address this particular shortfall? And then my last issue with regard to population and development, I would like to find out, Honorable Chair, how many municipalities were trained in this regard? What are the time frames for the training on integration of migration issues into the IDP? Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. These are my questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Stock. Can we give over to the department?
Thank you very much, Chairperson and Honorable Member, for comments and questions. We are going to respond to the questions after our ability. In this fashion, I will request some officials to respond accordingly. I will start with the questions that relate to issues of substance abuse, treatment centers that we see the Mahama. We'll ask, I think, Honorable Lizelle, Alexander, and have asked. Then it will be followed by Tawani. I think there was an issue of MME. We will then go to Pompidama on the issues of NPO registration. And then we will also go to HIV and AIDS, and I think there is the lady, Matsiso Pole, will do that. Then it will request Brenda to come in, and then we will be finance, we'll answer all the questions related to finance, and the acting DG today will answer the last questions on the presidential social sector summit. Thank you very much. Cesar, can we start with you?
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, Minister and Deputy Minister. I'll start with the first question on SAFER certificate. The DPME, that department, is the one that is responsible for issuing the certificate once they have satisfied themselves with the document that we have presented. So there has been back and forth from their side where they've been asking us to provide more information, clarify certain things and explain to them why maybe the policy that we are taking forward, why are we saying this, why are we not saying that. So there has been a lot of work that has been happening. It's not like the certificate, they were not providing or releasing the certificate because of the delays. They were not delays, it was them who felt that they were not satisfied with the information. So we kept on providing the information up until they are satisfied. And this target, we stretch it to 2 quarters because we know that there are those back and forth. So, but I am happy to announce that we have finally received the certificate on Monday the 19th. So we will be able now to take the policy forward to cabinet because we've got the SASA certificate on Monday. Then the second question is around the plans. Why are we doing plans on plans to address the social ills? Let me indicate that the plans that we are talking about here is mainly a rollout plan, if I may put it that way, a plan that says how are we going to deliver on those, you know, or address those social ills. For instance, we have a plan where we are saying to provinces, give us the identified sites, because when we are implementing, we don't just implement anyhow, but there's a structure and there's a process that we follow. So we together identify the sites where all these programs that are addressing social ills are going to be rolled out. Number two, we also need to agree with the provinces on the budget, how the implementation is going to be done. Number three, the plan also captures the monitoring. How are you going to get the information in terms of all the activities that they have agreed to implement? So the planning that we're talking about is merely just to ensure that all those social issues that we're talking about, the strategy, this is how it's going to be identified, how this strategy is going to be rolled out to.
Cesar, are you still there, or we should move to the next response? Let us go to Mpo Mpredam on the issue of the LPO registration system.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good afternoon, honourable members. On the issue of NPOs, to answer honourable Alexander, the platform for registration and compliance is, yes, we can track the intake and also the processing and the registration through NPO system, which is automated. However, in terms of the funding and the tracking, the department actually is at an advanced stage of developing an NPO payment system, which is nationalized and will be standardized. So with this system, we should be able to track payments and non-payments, and it is at the advanced development stage. So hopefully by the beginning of the financial year, we should be able to implement it, and thus would be able to automate and report as it were. On the issue of outsourcing, this is a Gauteng stance, and National Department actually never had a conversation around that. However, we will have to look into it because it might have some repercussions for NPO as stated by the member. For compliance, and to improve compliance, yes, non-compliance is very high. However, as a way of creating awareness for NPOs, at National, we are actually looking at non-compliance across the board, both funded by government and funded by private sector. So the programs that we are implementing to increase compliance and to create awareness, We are actually going into communities. The officials would go into communities across provinces through the roadshow program, where we have on-site reporting and on-site registration. We also have started implementing Know Your NPO Status campaign, whereby he actually create awareness for NPOs to know their status, inquire about their status of compliance. And what we have begun doing is that with the provinces, we have created a relationship where before provinces could transfer funds, we need to actually do due diligence and check whether certain NPOs do comply or not. So what we request is for the provinces to send us a list of NPOs they intend to fund, and we check against the database their compliance status, and we refer back to them. So there is that relationship with provinces in terms of transferring of money before they actually transfer funds. There is a question regarding the consolidation of comments. We have begun, there is a draft matrix as requested in terms of consolidating the comments. So this is at an advanced stage. However, because there was a request from the sector to extend the period of consolidation of submission of comments, we open for that. And what we have established is that much as the period has been extended, the comments are still coming in, and we are working with legal to ensure that by the time there's a close, the time for comments is closed, we will have a draft that we'll be able to submit. So we started consolidating from the beginning of submission. So a draft matrix report is available for that purpose. With regards to the summit, so this was a social sector summit in partnership with the civil society network, as well as NGA and the presidency. So because this was more of a more inclusive and bigger than the NGO sector, the department had issues in terms of accommodation, and to actually ensure that there is a wider participation for the summit, there was a platform for streaming and ensuring that those who were not physically present at the summit should be able to join the summit through the streaming. So also for budgetary purposes, it was not possible to accommodate everybody at a physical venue. Hence, there was the option for streaming. However, with the letter that we have received, we are actually working with the presidency to ensure that their views are listened to and their requests would be processed as they have requested, because we view their comments and their complaints as valid, and we have to ensure that every member of the civil society's concern is represented, and we have to make sure that as a department, we listen and we actually work together with the sector. They are an important part of the communities. This also relates to the issue of the framework, the views and the addition on the framework. So as part of working with presidency and the network, we're hoping that their views will also be accommodated in terms of making input into the framework. On the issue of list of NGOs that are receiving funding, I want to believe that this is possible. The department should be in a position to provide such information to the members as requested. Issues of non-payment. What we know is that on quarterly basis, the provinces would submit their payment schedule and also the progress on payment. So we are tracking that, and we will have to ensure that at the agreed time, the provinces would pay the NPOs because it's important for services to be provided and to honor the agreement as signed in the SLA. And as we have said that on issues of non-compliance, we work with provinces to increase their non-compliance so that payment can be made on time. I will pause there, Chairperson. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Can we then ask Program 1, Tawani will respond on the issues on the social workers on behalf of Program 1.
Mm-hmm.
Tawani?
Thank you, Chairperson. There were a few questions that were asked. Number one, on the MFE in terms of the delay in the pilot. I think there are just two factors. One is the number of assumptions that we made as well as a plan in terms of underestimating the amount of work and coordination that needed to be done by our provincial counterparts, engaging with the district for us to obtain all the information that is required that need to be inputted to the system so that it works. But however, I did indicate that we are making progress. Some of the three provinces that we've been counting, KZN, as well as the Eastern Cape, which would be for the piloting, we are engaging with them and we have received positive input and will continue to report on this in the subsequent quarters. The other question was on the training on the municipalities. 23 were planned with only train 23 by the end of the first quarter, and we will come up with a catch up plan to make sure that we are able to catch up with our targets by end of the financial year. There were a few questions that you asked under Program 1. One of the questions was on the social service professionals. The bid that was submitted, we are expecting as a department the response from the National Treasury in November, and we will take it forward from there. We agree and we note the comment that we must provide the one slide from Honorable Linder. One slide on quarterly basis, whenever we present quarterly reports, this is put the slide, which then shows how we have employed, how we have absorbed the social workers in the period under review. And I must say that we as a department, we've already engaged with the Department of Home Affairs, Justice, Correctional Services, Staff Defense, Basic Education, Higher Education, and quarter in that regard, and there will be then collected information so that we're able to include the slide, and that will disaggregate the extent and where these social service professionals have been absorbed. The total amount required for the employment of social service professionals is 9 billion, and this is on the full-time contract basis. On the different bills under legal services, Honorable Chairperson and members, all the bills that are in the APP have been drafted and finalized. However, the processing of them through various structures, they are at different levels. And one of the bills that we can say is already in Parliament is the Older Persons Amendment Bill, and the others are still at the consultation stage. Thank you so much, Honorable members.
Thank you very much. We earlier lost Cesar. She was not yet finished with her response. She's back. Cesar, if you can take the members' questions so that we can complete.
Yes, sincere apologies. It was load shading. Yes, I think the first one was on SESA. We did indicate that you have received the SESA certificate on Monday the 19th, so we'll be able to proceed. Then the second one on the project plans to address social ills. I've indicated that the plan was just the logistics to say how best are we going to implement or address the social ills. So the plan includes the identification of the sites, which we are doing, which we're doing with provinces. Second, it also talks about confirming the budget as well as monitoring how we're going to monitor the rollout of those activities. So we are on the right track. We've done that with provinces. We've already started implementing during the second quarter. Then the third question was around the how many government built public treatment centers we have. As government, we have built 13 public treatment centers countrywide. We have also have over 100 public treatment centers that provinces are subsidizing. So we have enough treatment centers. The challenge is more on other areas like the legislation as well as the upskilling of the prevention program. So we are working on that together with provinces to upskill the prevention programs and also reduce the availability of alcohol to protect communities. Those are some of the initiatives that we are currently doing. Then the last one was on the unregistered treatment centers. So though in terms of the legislation, all the treatment centers in the country must register first before they operate. Those who are operating without the registration, it's illegal operation. They are not supposed to operate. So therefore, what happens, the provinces will then close them down in terms of the legislation once they get to know which treatment center is operating illegal. So it is it's work that is ongoing to monitor the operations of those treatment centers. But in terms of the legislation, they're not allowed to operate. And the Act makes provision for us to close it down. Thank you.
We can now ask... Isabella, there was an issue. There was a question on the how we make sure that social workers are working or are doing quality work. Is it over to Isabella?
Thank you very much, MDG, and good morning again, and honourable members. And let me also appreciate the questions that have been raised. The issue of how do we ensure that social workers do their work. We've got a supervision framework that has been developed. I just want to give a context before I get to the real answer. We've got the supervision framework that has been developed, which basically talks to the responsibilities of supervisors as opposed to those of supervisors. And also it gives out the ratio in terms of the supervision of your supervisors. Now, according to the supervision framework, the ratio is 1:3, which means one supervisor must have 3 social workers, because it's taking into consideration that if you are supervising a person, you also carry the workload of that particular person. The person is dealing with 600 cases. It means that as a supervisor, those cases are they belong to you. And this 1:3 is for those supervisors who are only doing supervision, and that is in an ideal situation. But the current status as it is now, we find supervisors that are also doing operational work, but also doing supervision because of the shortage of social workers that we are dealing with. But also, you find that especially in those remote areas, and there are also not managers to manage, and also supervisors and social workers. And this particular supervisor is doing both management and supervision. Some are also doing operational work. And this is some of the circumstances that we find ourselves in. Now, in that particular situation, we are saying that 1:3 is for those that are so in that particular situation, we are saying that the ratio should be very low so that the supervisor can be able to do her job. Now, the current situation is that due to the circumstances we find ourselves in, the supervisors are supposed to have and scheduled or structured sessions with their supervisors, just to check on the workload and the work that they are doing, and to advise and to mentor and to coach, you know, these social workers. And because of the circumstances, the high number case load that the supervisors are finding, it becomes very much difficult for them to be able, you know, to do their work properly. So, but in essence, there is a supervision process that is being followed where the workload of the particular social workers is being looked upon, the cases are allocated, the progress is being looked at, supervisor is being supported in terms of carrying out their responsibilities. And in case the supervisor is not doing what is doing according to Social Service Professions Act, that is being dealt with in terms of that particular act, and it's being done by the council. Anybody can report that to the council so that it can be dealt with. But we are always encouraging a developmental approach in terms of ensuring that, especially those that are coming in the system, need to be supported in ensuring that, you know, they deliver on what they are supposed to be doing. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Brenda Sveko on the issues of the grant and the questions related to that.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good afternoon to the Honourable Members, Minister, PM, and our colleagues that are on the platform. With regards to the question that was posed around when the consultations are going to happen on the FATA amended bill, I'm happy to say that the consultations have happened already. What is outstanding is the, well, it's not outstanding, it's currently happening, is the consultations with the internal government structures, such as, for example, DPME, who are supposed to issue the SAIR certificate, and also the Office of the State Law Advisor, who must certify the draft deal so that he can then go to cabinet. We are expecting both of those. Part of it is happening now, but it will bleed into quarter three, and then by then we should be finished then and be able to table the bill for consideration at cabinet level. With regards to the question on appeals, yes, Honourable Abraham, the appeal numbers that you see them do not include the SRG grant. You will recall, Honourable Members, that the SRG grant, there was a delay in its implementation because we still have to do the regulations and then get started to set up the implementation process and so on. So the appeals only arrive after the grant has been paid when people then get a response. Those numbers will be reflected in the quarter two report when we come back to Parliament. They are quite significant, those numbers, but you'll be able to reflect on those when we come back for quarter two reporting. And then with regards to the issues around the under expenditure, it also comes as a result of that on program two. Because part of the SRG grant payments only started happening in June. It means that for April and May, we had not paid those grants by the time the end of the quarter one happened, and then the catch-up on those payments only happened in quarter two. So the quarter two numbers are likely then to catch up and make up for the under-expenditure that happened in quarter one. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Brenda. We will now ask for the finance issues.
Thank you, Kiki. In terms of the questions relate to the telecom matters, Honourable Member, it is currently a sensitive matter. We cannot terminate or stop the contract between us and Telkom for this specific toll-free hotline. That's currently being used by all beneficiaries to phone in terms of questions that they raise. However, we've already submitted whatever we paid through April for the specific toll-free line, we have submitted the disaster for reimbursement. Once they finalize the procurement process, because it has to be done in terms of that, to sign a new contract with Telkom, this number will be transferred to SASA and they will take forward all the accountability in terms of the payment of this account. So it's currently still being paid by us, but as I said, it will be reimbursed, it will be claimed back from SASA in the interim period until such time the account has been taken over by SASA. The
wasteful and fruitless expenditure is my omission, and I do apologize for that, Honourable Member. It will be included in the slides going forward in the other quarters. Just on background, in terms of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure for the prior year, we started off with a 2 million amount that was in terms of we recorded as fruitless and wasteful expenditure. We actually covered more than 50% of that in the prior financial year. We ended up with the 1 million, 1.1 million at financial year, and we will still continue with the whole processes in terms of the loss control investigation in terms of this. They do still relate to hotel no-shows and car damages, and there is processes that we have to follow to ensure that if employees are negligent, that this money is recovered. But we're also looking at our policies that we can streamline some of these processes. The employment of the social workers, the bit, Chairperson and some of our members, you are aware that when we did the entity submission to the National Treasury in July, the instructions was clear that departments were not allowed to submit any additional funding bits. However, we have registered this specific request to the National Treasury as part of a policy proposal that affects the whole of government. Now, National Treasury has to take their processes in terms of the impact hearings and the mid-com months of cabinet at the end of the day. It will take some time since we've submitted this in July. We do hope that in terms of their time frame that they've given to us, we will receive some feedback by end of October, beginning of November, we can start the preparations for our 2023 E&E allocations for the next financial year. So hopefully by October, when we report again to the portfolio, we might be able to give you some feedback in terms of this. Chairperson, the confirmation whether we will not underspend in this financial year, our biggest factor here is obviously our allocation for our social assistance grants. The history in this is that we've underspent in the prior years because of some beneficiaries not applying financially. There remains an estimated cost implication for the department. However, we are already going to declare a saving in the just estimates to National Treasury. Because of this delay, the 350 grant, we do not know now what the amount would be, but we are going to declare a saving which could result in an amount that we will save at the end of the financial year. It could be far less. Chairperson, I think that was the question. Also, the final one in terms of the EPOs, the no expenditure in terms of the EPOs. These national councils that we currently subsidize in the financial year is not the same as government. So we do normally two tranches in the financial year, which is the second quarter and the fourth quarter of the financial year. So therefore, there was no expenditure in the first quarter of this financial year that we haven't transferred. But we do strictly monitor these NGOs. There is certain compliance requirements for them to submit progress reports before we do a second or a first tranche in terms of this. But every financial year, we do transfer all the money that we have for national councils to them. And it's usually based on that principle that we transfer. They are compliant in terms of progress reports based on achievements. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Fanny. There were two questions that were not answered. The one is about the teenage pregnancy and the baby's labor that was presented by Nare. I would ask Nenisa to respond to that question. And there was a question on the development of tools, which I think Isabella will come and close, and then in HIV. There are others that I will respond to in terms of the ones that are achievement for first quarter, just to give you the feedback in terms of how far we have gone in terms of achieving those targets, especially the trading in Northern Cape. I'll come back on that. Can we ask Nelly and then Isabel and then I will sweep before I hand over to the chairperson. Nelson?
Yes, thank you, ADG. Good afternoon, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members and colleagues. In relation to baby savers, I would like to indicate that as the department, we do not have baby savers, or neither there are any baby savers that are registered. But what we have is temporary safe care places, which in the country is 74 altogether. Three in Eastern Cape, 16 in Free State, 7 in Gauteng, 12 in KZN, 5 in Limpopo, Mpumalanga 9, Northern Cape 5, Northwest 3, and in Western Cape it's 14. So altogether it's 74 temporary safe care places that we have where children that abandoned, neglected, or abused are temporarily placed whilst awaiting permanent placement for purposes of adoption or a foster placement or even placement in the children's home. That's how we address, you know, those children that are in need of care and protection and possibly abandoned. Thank you, DG.
Thanks so much, Nelson. Lastly, Isaf, and then I wrap up with the meeting. Hello, what the chairperson.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. The response on what was the reason for that was way advanced by Northern Cape in terms of postponing the training. They just mentioned the completing priorities. There were some emerging priorities that they had to attend to at that particular time, and therefore they had to, you know, to cancel the training. But having said that, we have already closed the gap. We have trained in that particular province, and we are on track, you know, and even in this second quarter, we'll be on track in that regard. The issue of the okay, the issue of why are we developing the tools now when we have been implementing the programs. Yes, it is true that we've been implementing the programs, both parenting, and parenting is also part of the family preservation program. What we did an evaluation of the implementation of those programs. And based on the findings and some of the gaps that we have identified, we had to relook into those tools and develop the tools that will be able, you know, to give us the information that we required, especially looking at the issue of the impact. Yes, thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. That the last one was the question by Honourable Stock on the issue of the training community mobilization and empowerment. It's similar. We could not complete the training due to the procurement of the venue, but I think that treasury issue was resolved, and even the targets that we could not do in Central Cape, we went back and the training took place already in July. And then it was just that it was planned for first quarter, but we already covered those issues. There was an underlying question. I think it was a little bit answered in terms of the 350 NPOs that have requested that are saying they were left out of the Presidential Social Sector Summit. And I think fundamentally we are aware that they requested us why were they left out when they were part of the 2019 one. And I think the questions were there, we responded to say that I think due to the budget constraints, we could not accommodate. In 2019, the summit was planned for 3,000 civil society organizations, and we only in 2022 could accommodate only 600 due to the budgetary constraints. So not everybody could be accommodated. But the approach that we took, some of the NPO were parks, and I think that's why they were agreed the legal, because we started at provincial level where there was a dialogue to discuss the issues based on the themes that were set. There were also questions about the framework. Can they comment on the framework? Yes, they will be. The framework agreement, from where we are, it is a document that will fit into the social compact. So it's not a legal document that says it's done. It is that we allow them to comment on that. Even the resolutions that we are working on, we still complete the workshop on the resolutions, and that will then find its way to embellish the agreement, and also that will fit into the social compact that will be developed. The issue of a single fund is a proposal from the civil society of why don't we establish a single fund, and I don't think that is something that we are planning to do. It's still going to be a discussion. There's still a lot of work to be done in terms of how do we ensure that the civil society organization access the funding. There was a question that I think honorable members, most of them asked this question about delay in funding the NPOs in different provinces. What we have found out in different provinces, we start with advertisement where everybody responds. Then they sign a seven-level agreement, and the first tranche is transferred. But several times we find that when they do what you call due diligence, we find that the non-profit organizations do not comply completely. One of the things that we're following up was the issue of one province where there were late funding transfer, but when we investigate, we find that the NPOs themselves didn't submit reports. They were funded, but they could not submit reports. But we are working on that. I think they raised the issue that we are developing a system that it will be uniform, that is with a click of a button, that will also allow the NPOs to be funded in time, because we depend on their services. And I think also on the other side of the compliance of the registrar, we are making sure that we also train them on the issues of governance. They must know how to run their non-profit organization. But I think the way we are now, headed, that I think within the next year, we will be having a system of funding, and it will alleviate all these delays that we have in different provinces. Chairperson, I think unless there's any other things that we have left out, thank you very much for listening to us and allowing us to come en masse, everyone coming and responding. I think that has taken a little bit of time, but we apologize for that. May I hand over to the chairperson, the acting is handing over to the chairperson of the protocol committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, acting. Thank you very much. I hope members are satisfied on how you have answered their questions. But it doesn't close for us to ask, even if we say in the next meeting, what about that thing that you presented last week to us? So it doesn't close anything. We still have to look at other things. Thank you very much for the presentation. And Stock has made me to be very comfortable in terms of the spending plans and settings. But I know for a fact that usually in the first quarter, people rush to use money. And then by the end of the term, they are saying they have overspent. That's my worry. Or they have an understanding between the two things. So how I wish that everything should be very cautious, do and do the necessary things and prioritize the process.
Chairperson, sorry, Chair.
Is there anything that is left?
Chair, there was a correspondence forwarded to members which I've received yesterday afternoon regarding an event tomorrow starting from 10. I don't know if members received that, that correspondence. Maybe you can speak via WhatsApp around the correspondence, Chair. It's from the office of the Speaker. That was forwarded to Mr. But I've only received it yesterday afternoon. I immediately forwarded to members that about 25 to 5 yesterday, Chair.
And you?
Chair?
Can you uncheck the letter?
Okay. Members, Abraham's hand is up. I don't know whether she wants to comment on that.
Can you just do that,
It's an engagement, Chair. It's from UNA. They said that the correspondence was sent to Mr. Frolic, whereby he approved for two members to participate in the round table, which is scheduled for tomorrow from 10 till 12:30, the 22nd. Let me check what is the content of the engagement. It's a multi-party parliamentarian engagement. It's from Education Plus Initiative, Chair. It's from UNICEF. They don't know exactly what will be. They will be participation from young people. There will be a number of organizations coming from various provinces that will take part on that round table, Chair.
Thank you very much.
We wanted to check whether we could be excused as a DSD or we should stay.
Okay, you can be excused because there's only one item left, which is the correspondence. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mama. Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members.
Take care.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, members. Goodbye.
Goodbye to the minister. Enjoy your stay. Go to Mrs., please.
Thank you.
Bring us a soon take and from me. Indeed, I'm waiting for in fact the correspondence, we can't discuss the correspondence. The only thing that we have to do is to allow two honorable members as it has been approved. Get someone from the opposition and then you get one from the
majority part.
Thank you. You'll call.
Hello me. And welcome aboard.
I think, Chair, the only challenge tomorrow is a caucus day, you know, from then. So, and also this engagement coincides with the caucus time. So maybe members will decide regarding the attendance. But they said only two people can attend. And you can
is there anything that
to touch?
The
Thank you, Chair.